Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
My Coffeetopia is the place for me. Coffee and tea and the honey and me at Coffee, Coffee, Coffeetopia.
Coffeetopia at 1723 Mission and 3701 Portola Drive in Santa Cruz offers the finest espresso, coffee, fresh local baked goods, and internet access. Come try our new Zawadi African chai. And remember, Coffeetopia, we're here to help.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. $825 billion. President Obama's economic stimulus plan is being passed in the House right now. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss is live from Capitol Hill.
The Democratic bill uses massive spending programs to try to create or at least save jobs in education, health care, construction, green energy projects, and even funding the arts. Wisconsin Democrat David Obey says it's vital.
The fact is this economy is in mortal danger of absolute collapse.
The bill has tax cuts for middle-class workers, not nearly enough, says Republican Paul Ryan.
All the rest of it is spending. Just plain old spending.
The Senate's working on its own version, and final passage is probably another 2 weeks off. Live on Capitol Hill, Bob Fuss, CBS News.
Is it a good plan? At the U.S. Chambers of Commerce, Mark Regalia.
It will improve the economy. It is a step in the right direction. It will not improve the economy as quick as we were hoping that it would.
That's because businesses were calling for incentives and conditional tax cuts as an immediate spur to create jobs. In Washington State, Governor Christine Gregoire's special assistant in charge of using stimulus money to create jobs says they can do it.
The funds for infrastructure and even some of the funds for things like Pell Grants and for training are all job-related. They will all produce jobs.
Washington expects to receive about $4 billion worth of stimulus money. Speaking of jobs, more of them are union jobs these days.
Union members now account for 12.4% of all wage and salary workers, and that's up from 12.1% in 2007.
Tom Nardone at the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Wall Street today, they liked it all. The Dow up 200 points, NASDAQ up 53. Postal Service says it's swimming in red ink again, and the postmaster has asked Congress to allow mail deliveries 5 rather than 6 days a week.
We're not asking for a bailout. This is not a bailout. We are looking for changes in the law that would enable us to address the current financial crisis in the United States.
Gregrick Fry, he's the spokesman for the Postal Service. We're paying more for postage and using it less. Mail volume went down 9 billion pieces last year. President Obama makes his first official visit to the Pentagon.
Our efforts to continue to go after extremist organizations that would do harm to the homeland is uppermost on our minds.
He wants to send more troops to Afghanistan and give them longer breaks in between tours, and wants the Pentagon to figure out how to do that. Even after they knew salmonella germs were present, officials say the Georgia peanut butter plant continued to sell its products to the industry.
Well, I think it's very, very disturbing information. Their actions, in my view, can only be described as reprehensible and criminal.
Connecticut Democrat Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro. 502 people have gotten sick, 108 in hospitals, 8 people dead. This is CBS News.
Listen, I'm not here to play games with you. I'm here to help you save up to 60% on last-minute flights. You walk away from this deal now, you're always going to wonder what might have been. I don't want that. I don't think you want that. Let's negotiate.
There's never been a better time to save on last-minute flights at Priceline. Book within 7 days of departure and you can save up to 60% off on flights when you name your own price, only at Priceline.
Name your own price is different from fixed-price travel sites. Exact airline and flight itinerary shown only after purchase. All sales final.
Are you looking to hire experienced software and hardware engineers, DBAs, storage engineers, project managers? Then look to Dice.com. For over 17 years, DICE, the number one online technology job board, has focused exclusively on tech jobs. Post your open technology positions on DICE to access the best tech talent, or search through thousands of resumes from qualified engineering and tech professionals from all across the country. Visit DICE.com. DICE.com.
You can live quite well on just one kidney. Kidney donors prove it.
For the first time, a large-scale study shows living kidney donors suffer no long-term consequences. University of Minnesota researcher Hassan Ibrahim says they live as long as other people and 85% have excellent kidney function.
I do hope that these results will encourage someone who considered it but was worried about living with one kidney to hopefully become a donor.
Donors are rigorously screened, so they must be healthy to begin with. This study in the New England Journal of Medicine. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
You think Earth is getting warm? There are super planets out there big enough to be a star, and they are not places we want to explore. Astronomers have found one four times the size of Jupiter that whips around its sun, which is close by, in a hurry. 980 degrees at night, 2,240 degrees in the daytime, hotter than the ovens that melt iron ore. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Hi, we're back with Worryline. Who are we talking with?
It's Cameron.
Cameron, what's worrying you today?
I'm freaking out.
Really? You don't sound like you're freaking out.
I know. That's what's freaking me out.
Okay, try and calm down.
I am calm.
So what's making you so calm? It's your mother, isn't it?
No, Mom's cool. It's my Volkswagen.
Oh.
It came with carefree maintenance.
And this has made you feel different, hasn't it?
Totally. Mm-hmm. I used to worry about my car all the time, but now I don't. What is happening to me?
I think you may be having an anti-anxiety attack.
A what?
Yes, it's an overwhelming sensation that everything is totally under control.
Okay, what do I do?
Nothing. There's no problem.
Cool. I guess I don't need you.
What? Hello?
Stop into your local Volkswagen dealer and ask about the Carefree Maintenance Program. No charge scheduled maintenance for 3 years or 36,000 miles, whichever comes first, on all 2009 Volkswagen models. Peace of mind. It's what the people want.
The Carefree Maintenance Program covers the vehicle's scheduled maintenance during the terms of the new vehicle warranty at no additional charge. Some limitations apply. See dealer for details.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, beaming your way from the left coast of America. I want to thank Stephanie Hendricks for sitting in yesterday. I'm feeling more better and ready to tackle some important issues. Talk to some great contributors on the program today and take your phone calls too at 888-5-PETER-B. We'll talk about the media with Carl Frisch from Media Matters and the latest eruptions from El Rushbo. Later this hour, Mike Lux will join us. He, like I am, is skeptical of the post-partisanship attempt from Barack Obama. And we'll talk about the negotiations over the stimulus and just how much respect Obama is getting from the Republicans that he has extended his love to. Next hour, Luke Bergman, the author of a new book called Getting Ghost, about young people in the drug trade in Detroit. It's an eye-opener. Also on today's program, California's Lieutenant Governor, Democrat John Garamendi. We're going to talk about the move to open up offshore drilling tracks off the coast of California and also the ongoing budget mess in Sacramento. Will there be a bailout in time to save Arnold's butt? Well, we'll find out. And Melanie Sloan will join us from CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. We'll talk about the new openness policies of the Obama administration and contrast those to the wars, the legal battles that CREW has waged to open up the secrecy of the Bush era. Again, my phone number is 888-5-PETER-B. Use it. Do not be afraid. After all, it's a free call, and I pay the bill myself. You can email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com, and I welcome your comments. Should you disagree with your humble host, address it to Fullofit, at peterbcollins.com, and it will get my attention. Carl Frisch is a senior fellow at Media Matters, and their website is a great way of finding out the truth and correcting the errors of the corporate media. That's mediamatters.org. Hello, Carl.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing okay. Good to have you with us today. And as I mentioned in the lead-in, there's been an interesting exchange, and I give President Obama credit for talking back to Rush Limbaugh, because over the years, Democrats have mostly just ducked when Limbaugh issued his attacks, virulent and often, well off the mark and varying widely from the truth. But Obama lectured the Republicans when, and the other thing about Obama that I find fascinating is he's bouncing all over town. He doesn't make everybody come to the White House to see him. He's been to the Hill. He's on his way to the Pentagon. He went to the State Department. And I think it's just interesting the way he has filled up the space in the past week. But at a luncheon when he went to visit Republicans on Capitol Hill to sweet talk them about the stimulus bill, he said, "You got to stop listening to Rush Limbaugh," and that's music to my ears.
Yeah, I think it's music to a lot of people's ears. That El Rushbo from EIB is getting it stuck to him. And you've had a couple of Republicans in the leadership try and distance themselves or the party from Limbaugh and then get snapped back into line by Rush Limbaugh by him calling them out on the air. The funny thing is all these Republicans trying to distance themselves. You know, I have a memory, and I remember in 1994 when the new Republican majority made Rush Limbaugh an honorary member of Congress.
Sure, Newty did that.
I remember, and I know Rush does too. We have a great item up on our website now, mediamatters.org, with the headline, "Number One Voice for Conservatism, Rush Limbaugh Wastes No Time Leading Assault on Obama."
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of lays out the role that Rush Limbaugh played early in the Clinton administration, 1992-93, with defining the attacks on President Clinton, and how he's picked up that megaphone again with the early days of the Obama administration. It's good to see some people pushing back on Limbaugh. You've had a lot of Democratic members step out and say that Rush Limbaugh doesn't speak for them. And you've had, a handful of Republicans do the same and then get snapped back into line.
Mm-hmm.
I've been told by some that there have been polls conducted, not by the White House, but in the past year or so, that gauged public opinion on Rush Limbaugh, and that at the time, this is about 6-8 months ago, Rush Limbaugh polled worse than President Bush's approval on the war.
Mm.
So
that's in the low 20s.
Yeah, and that's horrible. That basically means that the only people that like him are the far right of the Republican base. Not even the Republican base, the far right of the Republican base.
Well, and to be frank, the way the ratings work in the radio business, Rush has a relatively small but very loyal audience.
Sure.
And I know about this because I used to follow Rush every day on a station in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And what we saw when we opened up the ratings and drilled down to the details, pardon me, was that it was a small group of older, mostly males
that listened to the entire show.
Oh, not only that, he was on 3 hours a day on the San Francisco station. They would report 4, 5, 6 hours.
Right.
So he does have a loyal audience, and he claims a figure of 20 million, but I'm skeptical.
Right. It's hard to ever figure out. The best you can do is go with Talkers Magazine. I think they peg him at 8 or 12 million.
Mm-hmm.
It's obvious that he has a large audience and that he wields significant influence in the conservative movement. And this isn't about his audience so much as it's about the people affected by his audience. This is about the people that hear the smears, hear the lies at the water cooler every day at work and don't know that they're being generated by a guy like Rush Limbaugh. And if they knew that, they would, dismiss this BS out of hand.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing is that, there is room for criticism of the Obama administration, criticism of legislation, but he routinely goes below the belt. And let's listen to this little clip here that's up at Media Matters right now.
Request here from a major American print publication. Dear Rush, for the Obama Immaculate Inauguration, we are asking a handful of very prominent politicians, statesmen, scholars, businessmen, commentators, and economists to write 400 words on their hope for the Obama presidency. We would love to include you. If you could send us 400 words on your hope for the Obama presidency, we need it by Monday night. That would be ideal. Now, see, here we're caught in this trap again. The premise is, what is your hope for the... My hope, and please understand me when I say this, I disagree fervently with the people on our side of the aisle who have caved and who say, well, I hope he succeeds. We've got to give him a chance. Why? They didn't give Bush a chance in 2000. Before he was inaugurated, the search and destroy mission had begun. I'm not talking about search and destroy, but I've been listening to Barack Obama for a year and a half. I know what his politics are. I know what his plans are, as he has stated them. I don't want them to succeed. If I wanted Obama to succeed, I'd be happy the Republicans have laid down. And I would be encouraging Republicans to lay down and support him. I don't want, look, what he's talking about is the absorption of as much of the private sector by the U.S. government as possible. From the banking business, to the mortgage industry, to the automobile business, to the health care. I do not want the government in charge of all of these things.
So that's as much as I can stand. But, Carl, there are a couple of things in here. One is, for him to wish for failure for Barack Obama is really a call for the nation.
Can I respond as Rush Limbaugh if somebody had said that about George Bush?
Yeah, go ahead.
These people are traitors. They don't like our country. They never have. I mean, if it was a Democrat saying this about George Bush, he would accuse them of being traitors.
Well, and when people like me objected to Bush's policies in invading Iraq and occupying that nation, we were told, you know, we were criticized by people like Limbaugh for hoping for failure. And I have never hoped for failure in Iraq. I've
right.
only acknowledged that the policies are you know, a failure and misconceived. And, you know, no one has wished for defeat for the United States, but Bush put us in a perilous position
sure.
with a lot of bad judgment, and people like Limbaugh just roll over all that and say, well, you should support him.
Right, and Limbaugh went on, I believe it was either the same day or the next day, to say that what people want is for conservatives and everybody else to bend over and grab their ankles because Obama's the first black president. Which is interesting because Limbaugh typically says that Obama's not a black president, that he's an African American.
Yeah. Well, consistency is not important to Rush.
No, of course not.
It's simply trying to equal the shock level of the previous day, and that requires him to descend further and further. And so the latest that I have heard, Carl, is Limbaugh responding to the contentious distraction of some money for family planning in the stimulus package that Republicans have used to try to dismiss the whole idea. And he said, well, you know, the way to reduce the birth rate is to put a picture of Nancy Pelosi over your bed. Now, that is so virulently sexist. And I recall that the only time Rush could identify sexism among others was when people correctly attacked Sarah Palin. And so, you know, he found that there's sexism against Republicans, but here he is using it in a really disgusting way against the Speaker of the House.
Of course. This is vintage Rush Limbaugh. This is a guy when there was only, before Barack Obama was a senator, the last African-American senator, Carol Mosley Braun, also from Illinois, when she was the only African-American senator, whenever he discussed her on his show, he would play the theme song to the Jeffersons, Moving On Up. This is a guy who once told a caller to take the bone out of their nose and call him back.
Yeah.
You know, you can find this stuff on our website, MediaMatters.org.
Barack the Magic Negro song.
Barack the Magic Negro taking, you know, blaming the LA Times for the term when it was written by an African-American scholar and not the LA Times, and then totally misappropriating it. The list goes on and on, calling Americans and military veterans who oppose the war in Iraq phony soldiers. This is Rush Limbaugh. This is the Republican Party. This is the conservative movement.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if the way Obama has called him out will work. Certainly, Rush is thrashing away and now saying that Obama is more afraid of him than the Republicans. And, you know, it's real easy to do that when you're parked in a little booth in Palm Beach and you just live out your fantasies.
Sure.
But I don't think it's all going to wash in the real world. Carl Frisch with us from Media Matters. We'll take a break and return and see what some of the other right-wing radio nuts are saying about the incoming Obama administration. Your calls and comments, welcome here. 888-5-PETER-B, the Peter B. Collins Show.
Our radio show for the whole family. Dysfunctional family. Stephanie Miller on AM 540, KRXA, 6 a.m. weekdays.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Ever thought about shipping your child to a remote island? Want to send them to their room for the rest of their life? I can help. I'm Mark LeCluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in SoCal under the supervision of Dr. Chaim Barton. For the past 10 years, I've been helping parents, teens, and kids overcome challenges in their lives, and I'd like to help you too. I can work with your family to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection. I offer an affordable sliding scale, and I'm currently accepting new clients. Please call for an appointment. 831-818-4033. Parenting doesn't have to be so hard. I'm Mark LeCluse. Give me a call. 818-4033. That's
818-4033. Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
What would life be without flowers? It would be like a birthday cake with no candles, a wedding with no ring. It would be like a graduation without friends and relatives, a promotion without a raise. Thankfully, life is full of flowers and reasons to give them. In fact, sometimes the best reason is no reason at all. And all you have to do is stop by or call Ferrari Florists and Gifts. You see, flowers from Ferrari Florists and Gifts are more personal and special because whatever you're celebrating, we can create unique arrangements from a wide selection of fresh-cut flowers, and we can deliver them the same day, so you can enjoy life and even declare your love with flowers. Call Ferrari Florists and Gifts today at 460-7000 or visit our website at www.ferrariflorist.com. And we'll help you realize the true potential of flowers. Ferrari Florists and Gifts, 514 Front Street, Santa Cruz. Experts in the art of expression.
Hi, I'm Audrey Williams.
And I'm Melvin Williams.
Check out our new show, Holy Hip Hop on the Block, every Saturday from 10 to 12 noon, right here on KRXA 540 AM.
Check us out.
Frisch with me from Media Matters for America. You got to go to their website if you haven't already, mediamatters.org. John of Carmel Valley is on the line. Hi, John. John, do you hear me? John, it's your big Oh, I didn't press the button. It's dangerous to do a radio show on cold meds. I have to tell you that. John, go ahead.
I've said this before, but I want to do it again because I think it ranks as one of the stupidest things anybody ever said. Limbaugh says in his book, The Way Things Ought to Be, that
which John Fund wrote, by the way.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Fund was on our show for 10 minutes before he hung up. Go ahead, John.
Who is he?
John Fund writes for the Wall Street Journal op-ed or something like that. Editorial page? Is that right,
yes.
Carl?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe Fund said this, but it's attributed to Limbaugh, that if we all sat down today or tomorrow and decided to create global warming, mankind couldn't do it. And another point that when Clinton was still president, his brother ran into Limbaugh in a hotel lobby, and he went up to him and he said, "You're my brother's biggest nemesis." And I heard him say this on a talk show, and according to what he said was, Limbaugh just looked at him and walked on and didn't say a thing. But, you know, it was true. It was absolutely the...
Rush couldn't hear him because he had blown out his eardrums with OxyContin. John, I want to jump to another call, but thanks for checking in today. Joe on Monterey Bay listening on KRXA. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Great station. Yeah, what I can't figure out with these Republicans and with Fresh Limburger and all them people is I'm surrounded. I have to talk kind of quiet. I'm actually surrounded by people that still believe him.
Yeah.
And I'm not. I didn't say rednecks. But these are your red zone people who used to call you a commie if you said anything about red, but now they're proud to be red. Okay, and they're not even redheads. Okay. Now here's the deal. In Zen, they say if you want the answer, look at the opposite. If you want to find light, you go through the darkness. I've been there. I know. Where is it?
Where so what's the Zen approach to Rush Limbaugh?
Okay, here's the deal. When he spouts off and when he's denigrating our new president on racial grounds and ineptitude and all this stuff, when he's knocking Michael J. Fox for being having a disease, these are all violations of the Patriot Act. They're violations of the RICO Act. I would drag his cigar puffing fat derriere right to the laws that they passed.
All right, Joe, you file the lawsuits. Hey, Joe, file the RICO lawsuit and get back to me, okay?
Yeah, but
interesting theory, but I'd like to see you put it into action. I appreciate the call. Now, Carl, what else is the chatter on the right in terms of talk radio? How's Savage handling this, and how's Sean Hannity holding up?
Hannity, you know, now has his own nightly television show, sans Alan Colmes.
Yeah, Alan stopped participating.
Yeah. So now it's just Hannity and Hannity. But I think two big issues that folks are on right now, because everybody's talking about the economic stimulus. They have been for quite a while. But you've got a lot of people on the right, Hannity, Quinn and Rose, Savage, talking about the stimulus. In particular, they've gotten back to their fetish of talking about the group Acorn.
Yeah.
They're claiming that the stimulus was going to give them almost $5 billion, which is just ridiculous.
And you report on Media Matters that my own little San Francisco Chronicle picked up that false story and published it.
Lots of people did, and yeah. It's been being pushed around by conservatives, and it's made its way up into a lot of different news outlets. Some have corrected the record.
And how much is Reverend Wright supposed to get from the bailout stimulus? Huh? Do we know? Bill Ayers, where is he in this? Huh?
They keep on talking about Acorn, and I just keep on telling them they're nuts.
Yeah, we'll give you a drum roll for that.
Thanks. They're also talking about, in addition to Acorn, the whole issue of family planning, and they're trying to compare Nancy Pelosi and Obama to wanting a one-child policy or eugenics and Nazism, because part of the stimulus plan did include money for low-income women to have family planning options.
That would save us $200 million a year.
Right, exactly.
But that's not important.
And Medicaid that lots of people already would be using in other states. So, it was helpful, but of course they misconstrued it entirely.
Carl, I'm out of time. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you again real soon. Appreciate your contribution. Carl Frisch from MediaMatters.org. We'll take a break, and Mike Lux returns next on The Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by Stamps.com. Print real U.S. postage with your own computer and printer, just like having a real post office at your desk. Go to Stamps.com right now, click on the radio microphone, and type in Osgood for a special offer for my listeners. I'm Charles Osgood. Novelist John Updike, who died yesterday at the age of 76, was not just a very good writer. He was a great one, says Robert Silvers of the New York Review of Books.
He was one of the great American writers, and he was devoted to literature.
Who but Updike could have written the line Jack Nicholson delivered in the movie made of his novel The Witches of Eastwick?
Of course, we make mistakes, they call it evil. When God makes mistakes, they call it nature.
Some advice from John Updike after this. Time is money, especially in business. So why waste time going to the post office and waiting in line there, especially in this economy? What I do instead, and highly recommend, is to use Stamps.com. At Stamps.com, you can print real U.S. postage with your own computer and printer. Just sign up at Stamps.com, and within minutes, you'll be printing all your postage right at your desk. No need to go to the post office. Right now, we've arranged a special Stamps.com offer for Osgood listeners. A four-week trial, plus a $100 bonus offer, including $45 in free postage when you use my name. Pretty good deal, don't you think? More free postage if you remember to use my name, Osgood, O-S-G-O-O-D. So go to Stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the radio microphone you'll find at the top of the homepage and type in Osgood, and within minutes you'll be able to print all your postage. For the four-week trial and $100 bonus offer, remember Stamps.com. And did I mention typing in Osgood? In 2004, in an interview with the Academy of Achievement, John Updike offered encouragement and some advice to would-be writers. Read, he said. Read what excites you.
All those mystery novels I read, I think, did give me some lesson about keeping a plot taut, trying to move forward or make the reader feel a kind of a tension is being achieved, a string is being pulled tight.
And when you write, think about the reader, said Updike. Readers will reward you by buying your books.
We're still a capitalist country, and writing to some degree is a capitalist enterprise, when it's not a total sin to try to make a living and court an audience.
John Updike's books were successful enough to make him rich. But paradoxically, he told writers,
don't try to get rich, on the other hand. If you want to get rich, you should go into investment banking or being a certain kind of lawyer. But on the other hand, I would like to think that in a country this large and a language even larger, that there ought to be a living in it for somebody who cares and wants to entertain and instruct a reader.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Come here, Max. What's wrong? What? Oh, I get it. A rough day?
Hi, I'm Dr. Annetta Richmond, inviting you to Natural Veterinary Therapy in Pacific Grove, the peninsula's new holistic veterinary medicine clinic featuring a wide variety of natural treatments and remedies for common ailments. We also specialize in acupuncture, chiropractic, and physical rehabilitation using an underwater treadmill. Natural Veterinary Therapy, Lighthouse Avenue between 14th and 15th in Pacific Grove. Our environment is unique. Clients comment on how calm and caring it is for their pets and themselves. At Natural Veterinary Therapy, our goal is to help your pet heal from within. So think for yourself and think for your pets. Visit our website at naturalveterinarytherapy.com or call 655-0501. That's 655-0501.
Meow. Whiskers, I'd better call Dr. Richmond for you, too.
Meow, meow.
live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Obama is talking to Republicans. Lefties are developing wedgies. Where will this lead? Oh, come on, relax. He's only been a president for a week. Mike Lux, a progressive strategist based in Washington, is the author of the powerful new book that hasn't reached my office yet called The Progressive Revolution. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm looking forward to getting your book so I can dive into it and talk about all of your theories and strategies.
Well, I hope you get it soon, Peter. I'm sorry it's not there yet.
Well, it's okay. As soon as it is, I'll actually read it, and then we'll talk about it in depth. Mike, I wanted to ask you about what's going on in Washington right now and the pros and cons of the new president's approach, particularly conciliatory comments to Republicans and actually responding to some of their complaints about the stimulus legislation that is taking shape right now. And on the one hand, I think it's kind of cool that Obama, you know, is traveling around town. He's not staying in the bubble at the White House. And for him to go up to the Hill and have lunch with House Republicans, I think is a pretty good thing. And then he responded to some of their criticisms by asking Henry Waxman to strip out the piece of legislation that would provide funding for family planning as part of Medicare. And on the one hand, I don't think it's a crucial aspect of stimulating the economy. On the other hand, I hate to see Republicans cherry-picking and using one aspect of a huge bill to distract us from the important crisis that we're facing. And that by responding to their specious concerns, and I do think they're specious, that he's actually, you know, giving them more cred than they deserve. How do you think he should be playing this?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Peter. I wrote a blog on Open Left about his reaching out, and I think this, all of the symbolic reaching out is great. I think the fact that he attended a dinner, in fact, helped organize a dinner the night before the inaugural honoring John McCain is wonderful. I think spending 3 hours with Republicans going over their ideas and complaints is great. I have no problem with any of that. I do worry, like you, about the idea that we're going to give the Republicans much on policy if they're bad ideas. I mean, if they have a great idea for a new tax break that can really actually help small business, fine. You know, I have no problem taking Republican ideas, but just taking their bad ideas, I do have a problem with.
Yeah. Well, and on the small business side, you know, Mike, I run a small business, and I don't need a tax cut. I need more business.
Right.
And I'll be happy to pay the taxes that I owe if I get more business.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
You know, the idea that you can tax cut me into hiring more people or spending more money on computers or whatever it is just a fallacy. And we have cut taxes so much in the last 8 years. To a negative effect, that this, you know, we're what, at about 44% of the proposed stimulus is various tax cuts championed by Republicans. And to me, that's too much, and it's a waste of money.
Well, I think some of the tax cuts in the bill are okay. I think there are some tax cuts that are very definitely targeted toward lower-income people and toward working class people who will take that money immediately and spend it.
Right.
And I think that's great stimulus. So I don't have any problem with that. I do have a problem with these sort of business tax cuts that don't actually do anything to help business. You know, I mean, some of these tax cuts are just kind of just like sops to business people who aren't going to do anything differently or make any other decision about hiring or spending or anything else. So that I think is what we've got to avoid. You know, I understand where Obama's coming from in some ways, because he doesn't want to have a distracting argument over the stimulus plan. He wants to get it passed. So he's being very focused on it and trying to take the most controversial stuff out. But I think he and all of us need to stick to our guns on the things that we really believe in, because after all, we did win the election and we should act like we won.
Well, and he blurted that out at one of those conferences at the White House last week. And I think that's an important thing to note, is that, we'll listen to you, but the Democrats won. And that is a message from the American public. And back to your point about John McCain and the way Obama, a magnanimous victor, honored him the night before the inauguration, that glow hasn't held because McCain has, said he'll vote against the stimulus, and he also has been a little bit cranky about some of the confirmations.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I think that Obama reaching out symbolically is a great thing for the country and does help sort of bring us together. But I think on the issues, we should debate them out, and whoever's got the votes ought to win. And right now, we have the votes as long as we're willing to have the guts to take them and do what we think is right.
And let me just interject a couple of factoids here. We got a report from the Economic Policy Institute earlier this week. A dollar spent on food stamps stimulates the economy at the rate of $1.73. Unemployment benefits, a dollar gets you $1.64. Bridges, infrastructure, public buildings, even the Washington Mall, a dollar gets you $1.59. Bailout money for the states, and we've got both hands out here in California.
Yep.
A dollar gets you $1.36. Now, cutting capital gains, making those tax cuts permanent, a dollar cut gets you a return of 37 cents.
Yeah, exactly.
Corporate tax cuts, a dollar gets you 30 cents, and most of those companies don't even pay taxes today anyway.
No, that is exactly right. You know, it is really important on this thing that the economy is in too bad a shape to do things that don't work. And we've got to focus on things that actually work. And the research, has shown this over and over and over again, that tax cuts for rich people and big businesses does very little to stimulate the economy. It stimulates rich people, just fine, but doesn't actually stimulate the economy. So we need to stop doing things that don't work.
Well, and Mike, the other thing is that by tipping his hand to Republicans, he actually gives credibility to some of their failed theories. And so the Republicans are really sounding the same themes that they did during the Bush era, and that's what got us into this mess, and it clearly won't get us out. And what I would ask Democrats to push back with is to our dear Republican friends, when are the people who are sitting on billions of dollars of private money going to come back into the market? Because everybody's on the sidelines waiting to see how much the government is going to do to absorb the losses created by the capitalist class. Yet they're not really coming to the rescue of this nation. They're taking pot shots at parts of the stimulus that they don't like, but they're happy to take the money, even if it means passing out bonuses of $4 billion to Merrill Lynch employees or buying a new corporate jet. And so,
it's outrageous, Peter. I mean, the stuff that is going on, the problem with the Bush version of saving the banks is that they put no strings on that money. We gave away $350 billion to banks with no strings on them as to what they were going to do with that money. So they did exactly what you were just talking about. They did bonuses to their CEOs. They did bonuses to their big executives. They merged with other banks. Well, great, but that doesn't do anything to stimulate the economy. They buy themselves corporate jets, which I guess stimulates the corporate jet manufacturer, but that's about it. I mean, it's just craziness. And we have to, if we're going to use federal money, to bail out these banks. We have to get some return on that investment.
Mike Lux with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. My lines are open. Let me know what you think about this posture of Barack Obama and whether this conciliatory approach to Republicans will work. I have my doubts, and Mike, I think you've really framed it properly, that these kinds of broad gestures and symbolic moves, I think, are good to try to signal a change in tone in Washington. But when you extend your hand and you get a fist back, and it's not a black power fist bump, I think you have to look at that and learn a lesson from it. And also, I want to ask you the calculus in the Senate, because Katrina just flashed me that the House did approve the package 244 to 188.
Yes.
So where are the votes in the Senate? And do we have Democrats who want tax cuts who are holding out?
Well, we have the situation in the Senate is this. We're two votes short of 60 in the Senate, because Franken hasn't been seated yet. The Republicans are holding that up, and they'll hold it up as long as they can with their bogus court case. But we're at 58-41, and we need 60 to cut off debate. We need to pick up a couple of Republican votes. We are very likely to be able to do that because people like Olympia Snowe, Susan Collins, don't necessarily want to stand in the way of this. And B, because it's really not, if the Republicans block a stimulus bill, that's going to look really bad for them. So they'll probably sort of give a wink and a nod to some of their moderates to go ahead and vote for this thing. They want to raise hell about it, but they don't, it would look horrible for them to end up blocking this thing. So that's my sense of where we're at in the Senate. Some of the Democratic senators, as you know, Peter, are more conservative, and there probably will be a bill that is that has more tax cuts in it than we would like, more conservative than the House bill. It'll go to conference committee and be worked out there, and hopefully we'll come back with a pretty good bill.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mike, do you think that Republicans need a little re-education about what it really calls for when you're in the minority? Because I get the feeling that they don't quite understand that. And let me give you one example. We were hammering El Rushbo earlier this hour, and I heard a clip from him the other day where he was suggesting that the split on the stimulus should be based on the electoral vote, the split on November 4th. And he was saying it was, roughly 54-46, so we ought to have 46% tax cuts. Now, I find that very amusing, because Bush didn't have a majority in either of the elections that he was installed after. We won't get into election theft, but you know my point. And he ruled as if he had an 80% mandate in both of those elections. And so I find it amazing that the Republicans are suggesting this kind of, split the difference approach when they had a take no prisoners approach. And by the way, permitted no amendments in the House on major legislation, which they're now whining about under Speaker Pelosi.
Right. Yeah, no, they have very big kahunas, Peter. And it does not matter what happened when they were in the majority. It doesn't matter what happened when they had the presidency. What they said then, how they operated, none of that matters to them. Now that they're in the minority, they have this whole new philosophy about what's fair and what's not. And it's just patently absurd, and we need to push back on them hard.
Well, I
talk about that in my book, Peter. Mm-hmm. I talk a lot of the book is about history, but the last couple chapters talk about the present day and the lessons of history for the present day. And I argue in there that Democrats need to think big, and they need to push these Republicans very hard, because we have the ability to really make changes that will benefit the country if we really play hardball with the Republicans and go ahead and win some of these fights.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you there. I like the idea of symbolic postpartisanship, but when it comes to the grind of legislation, I think the Democrats do have to think boldly, think big, and not let the Republicans distract them over a little contraception here and there. We'll take a break and return. Mike Lux is with us. His new book is called The Progressive Revolution. And if you have a comment, I want to hear it. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill.
If you like people who talk funny, listen to Stephanie Miller in the morning on AM 540 KRXA. Ha!
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. A Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Our top item today, echoing the Republican leadership office, members of the media, including the San Francisco Chronicle, are falsely claiming that over $4 billion of the economic stimulus plan is going to the liberal activist group, Acorn. Here's Rush Limbaugh.
Do you know that in the Obama stimulus package, $4.19 billion is going to Acorn, Obama's community organization? Would somebody tell me what the stimulus is in that?
In actuality, a provision of the stimulus package would appropriate $4.19 billion to neighborhood stabilization activities related to emergency assistance for the redevelopment of abandoned and foreclosed homes, not Acorn. But today's most outrageous comment goes to Sean Hannity, using instances of erratic weather patterns to dismiss global warming.
By the way, did you hear that for only the second time in history, it snowed in the United Arab Emirates? Global warming?
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 9 minutes in front of the hour. 888-5-PETER-B puts you through to our switchboard, 888-573-8372. We're talking with Mike Lux, progressive strategist, the author of The Progressive Revolution. He blogs at openleft.com, and he often agrees with me, which is why we keep inviting him back. Brian, listening in Manchester, New Hampshire. Welcome, Brian. You're on with Mike Lux. Brian, do I have you? Going once? Oh, he didn't make it. He says up here, party line vote in the Senate. Well, we can't get to a party line vote until you have cloture. That's the issue of the 60 votes. And, Mike, are you seeing enough Republicans, the Olympia Snow types, ready to support this and give the Democrats the cloture vote they need to get it through the Senate?
Well, I as I was saying before break, Peter, I suspect there will be. You know, it's still, you know, there's still some dancing left to be done. But I feel pretty confident that we're going to get enough Republicans, and it won't be very many, by the way. It won't be very many. It may only be two, but two is all we need. So,
But what about the wobbly Democrats? Kirsten Gillibrand is a blank slate to me, but she often votes conservatively. We've got Blanche Lincoln and Mary Landrieu, who typically vote with Republicans on economic issues.
I think they'll all be okay on this one. You know, this is Obama's first big vote, and I think there's going to be a lot of sense of of pressure on the Democrats to work together to get it right. And I think because of some of that conservatism by some of those members, that there'll probably be more compromises than you and I would like, Peter, on some of the tax cuts. But I think. I think they'll be able to work things out so that they get it through the Senate.
All right, we got Brian back here. Let's give him another shot. Go ahead, Brian.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to ask, gentlemen, up here in New Hampshire, we have, as far as Republicans that are that might vote for the budget package, the stimulus package of President Obama. I remember in 93, President Clinton's package was, they voted down straight party lines in both the House and the Senate. It took Al Gore's deciding vote in the Senate to finally pass that budget that got us the surpluses and that kind of thing. Here, up here in New Hampshire, Judd Gregg is running for re-election in 2010, and he claims he's a fiscal conservative, but he looks the other way, gives a wink and a nod when they steal this president alone $3.1 trillion from Social Security surplus, I believe it is, the annual surplus amounts, and our retirees, if they keep looking to those privatized efficient retirement funds, they just lost about 80% of their value in the Wall Street crash and bailout there. But Judd Gregg, he's probably still going to vote against this stimulus package, even though I believe it does not include the tax hike as of yet for people over $250,000 net income for all the Joe the plumbers out there that per year. it does include the tax cut, I believe, for people who make a net income of less than $250,000 or less per year. But I'm wondering, what senators does he see that will flip over to support Obama?
I think that the ones that are most likely are the two women senators from Maine, Snow and Collins.
Right.
I think Voinovich is a possibility because he's retiring and because he is more moderate. He's a fiscal conservative, and he may not end up going with us. Specter has given some indications that he might be voting with us. I think those are probably the four most likely. There may be. You know, it's possible we may get another one or two someplace, but I think those are the four most likely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right, Brian, thank you very much. Let's jump to Stephanie in Greenfield, South Monterey County. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. I was wondering what is going on with the cable conversion. I saw that on the bill it's, what is it, $650 million to do that, and doesn't Obama want to table that?
Now, are you referring to the digital TV issue?
Yes. And, I think we should table that. Who cares? We don't need that. Put that money towards education.
Well, but where's the dollar figure come from? There's no government.
It's in the bill.
Mike, what do you know about this? Because what I heard.
I honestly don't know anything about it. I hadn't heard anything about it.
Okay. What I heard was the Senate unanimously delayed the transition date to June.
I know that they delayed switch over, but
right.
I don't know.
Broadcasters claim
about what
that
the money's
they
for.
Broadcasters claim that they have additional costs because they basically have to be transmitting on two channels. The fact that they got the spectrum for free should ease their concerns.
Yeah. No kidding.
Stephanie, I haven't heard of any government dollar figures there. There were some, coupons to help people buy conversion boxes, but I thought the TV industry paid for that, not the government.
No, I saw it on, page 300 and something of the bill, and it's some astronomical figure, like $650 million.
Okay, well, I need to look into that. If you could email me the information, I'd love it, Peter at peterbcollins.com, and I'll take a closer look.
Okay, thanks.
All right, Stephanie, thanks. And, Mike, about a minute and a half remaining. What would you like to add here about some of the good things? I mean, we've been a little critical of Obama on his reaching out to Republicans, but he's still batting about 900 on my Jumbotron.
Oh, yeah. You know, Peter, this is actually – there's so many good things in this package. I was talking to a guy here in D.C. the other day, Deepak Bhargava of the Center for Community Change, which is the leading anti-poverty organization in D.C., he said he went through the budget bill line by line. He said it's the best legislation for poor people that's been introduced in 40 years, basically since the war on poverty. The aid to the states, which you talked about earlier, is really important. The environmental spending on saving energy and renewable energy, incredibly important in terms of starting us down the road on climate change. I mean, there's so many good things about this. There's tons of education money. There's tons of healthcare money that get us down the road on those issues. So this is a package, I think, regardless of what things we might not like in it. This is a package overall I think we can be very happy about and very proud of.
Mike Lux, thank you very much. I always enjoy talking with you.
I always enjoy it too, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Coming up next, Luke Bergman. He's written a book called Getting Ghosts about the drug trade in Detroit. That's next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Has your computer been slowing down? Are you having problems with your email? Or when you go to the Internet, is your browser taking so long to load that it seems like the worldwide wait? I'm Luke Ford, CEO of My Computer Works. We help people just like you with computer problems you can't fix. With one easy call, we can help you get your computer working the way you want it, speeding it back up, making sure you can send and receive emails, and making the Internet fun again. You'll speak to a U.S.-based technician who knows what they're doing, who can usually fix your computer on the very first call. If your computer's been slowing down, you can't get your email to work, your Internet's taking forever, or if you're not sure what's wrong, but your computer's just not working the way you want it, call My Computer Works, and we'll help you fast.
Call My Computer Works right now, toll-free, 888-629-9618. Tell them Peter B. sent you, 888-629-9618. One more time, 888-629-9618.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The House votes on the stimulus package.
The bill is passed without objection.
But not a single Republican supported it. The Treasury might start buying up bad loans.
The point is to make bank assets look healthier so banks get back to lending and investing.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. It was a party-line vote less than an hour ago when the House approved a slightly modified version of the Democrats' economic stimulus plan. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss has more.
The $819 billion measure is designed to get the economy moving again or at least stop its downward spiral, says House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
Create and save 3 million jobs by rebuilding America.
By sending huge sums to states to rebuild schools and pay for health care for the poor and newly unemployed, build roads and bridges, modernize the electricity grid, bring high-speed internet to rural areas, increase financial aid to college students. President Obama sought Republican support but didn't get a single vote. House Republican leader John Boehner says what they want is to cut taxes.
Fast-acting tax relief is the way to get it done.
The Senate considers this measure next and is likely to make it even bigger. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
In another bid for bipartisanship, the president invited a group of Republican and Democratic lawmakers for cocktails at the White House this evening. Now this.
Two drivers, two very different stories, heading home on a dark evening.
I hit the open road.
A deer popped out of nowhere. I panicked.
I saw a deer in the road. I slowed down.
I jerked the wheel. I wish I could have seen it.
I drove around it and was home before the next song on the radio.
With Silver Star headlights from Sylvania, you'll see more of the road ahead. Remember, headlights dim over time. Replace them before you are left in the dark. Visit your automotive retailer and choose the whitest, brightest light. Silver Star headlights from Sylvania.
We just saw a fantastic football party, ladies and gentlemen, and here's the MVP, Elaine. How'd you make tonight such a success?
I joined Sam's Club.
Sam's Club?
That's right, Jim. They gave me a $10 gift card for becoming a new member, and I won with savings on all my food and beverages. Plus, my husband found a TV at a terrific price.
Well, there you have it, folks. Her secret is Sam's Club. Not a member? Join by February 1st and receive a $10 gift card. Restrictions apply. See the member services desk at your local Sam's Club for details.
The TARP fund was supposed to be used to buy up the bad loans banks were carrying. Instead, the Bush administration gave them direct infusions of cash, But there was word today that the government might take over those troubled assets after all. The Dow rose 200 points on the news, closing at 8375.
I'm Dan Revive. Stock investors like what they hear about an Obama administration plan to create bad banks, which would take perhaps over $1 trillion worth of complex futures and home loans gone sour away from Bank of America, Chase, and Citibank, for instance, putting them in a federal bad bank to just hold those securities or sell them at a loss, leaving healthier banks to get back to lending and investing. Dan Revive, CBS News, Washington.
The Fed, with no more room to cut interest rates, met today and said it will employ all available tools to spur sustainable economic growth. President Obama got a military briefing in a secure room at the Pentagon this afternoon.
We're going to have some difficult decisions that we're going to have to make surrounding Iraq and Afghanistan most immediately. Our efforts to continue to go after extremist organizations that would do harm to the homeland is uppermost on our minds.
The White House says Mr. Obama is close to a decision on winding down the war in Iraq. Mideast envoy George Mitchell arrived in Jerusalem today just hours after Israel bombed Gaza smuggling tunnels in retaliation for a Palestinian attack that killed an Israeli soldier.
Of critical importance is consolidating the ceasefire, including a cessation of hostilities, an end to smuggling, and the reopening of the crossings based on the 2005 agreement.
There's late word that Israeli warplanes attacked Gaza again after Hamas fired a rocket into Israel. Six-day-a-week mail delivery could be going the way of the penny postcard. The Postal Service could lose $6 billion this year, and because of the Internet, spokesman Greg Rick Fry says mail volume is way down.
We're continuing to look for places to save money to get us through this period. The problem is the mail is not coming in like it once was.
The Postal Service wants Congress to lift the requirement that mail be delivered 6 days a week. Fry says they won't necessarily eliminate Saturday delivery. It depends on when mail volume is the lightest. The prosecution has rested at the impeachment trial of Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich. The state Senate will hear closing arguments tomorrow, and it will also hear from the governor. Blagojevich has changed his mind and now wants to make a statement before senators vote. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Listen, I'm not here to play games with you. I'm here to help you save up to 60% on last-minute flights. You walk away from this deal now, you're always going to wonder what might have been. I don't want that. I don't think you want that. Let's negotiate.
There's never been a better time to save on last-minute flights at Priceline. Book within 7 days of departure and you can save up to 60% off on flights when you name your own price, only at Priceline.
Name your own price is different from fixed-price travel sites. Exact airline and flight itinerary shown only after purchase. All sales final.
Are you looking to hire experienced software and hardware engineers, DBAs, storage engineers, project managers? Then look to Dice.com. For over 17 years, Dice, the number one online technology job board, has focused exclusively on tech jobs. Post your open technology positions on Dice to access the best tech talent, or search through thousands of resumes from qualified engineering and tech professionals from all across the country. Visit Dice.com. Dice.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Later this hour, California's Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi will join us, talk about the budget mess in California and whether the bailout's going to help, also about offshore drilling.
As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I take a look at my life and realize there's nothing left. Cause I've been blasting and laughing so long that even my mama thinks that my mind is gone. But I ain't never crossed a man that didn't deserve it. Me be treated like a punk, you know that's unheard of. You better watch how you're talking and where you're walking, or you and your homies might be lying to chalk. I really hate the trip, but I gotta know. As they go, I see myself in the pistol smoke. Fool, I'm the kind of G a little homies wanna be like. On my knees in the night, saying prayers in the streetlight.
This half hour, we're joined by author Luke Bergman. His new book is called Getting Ghost. And I've just had a chance to read the first part of it. It's about the drug trade in Detroit. And he's spent some time at the juvenile detention facilities there. And what I read, I found very compelling, Luke, and I'm looking forward to getting the book, reading the whole thing. Welcome to our program today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell me about your connection to Detroit. You grew up in Ann Arbor, the university town a few miles to the west.
That's right. Actually, I was born in Ann Arbor to a philosophy professor father and a modern dancing mother, and was exposed to Detroit at a pretty early age in a couple of different ways. My dad was a restless philosopher and a politically committed philosopher, so he was spending a lot of time in the city doing labor activism, especially around our last real recessionary crisis in the early 80s. He was spending a lot of time in Flint and in Detroit working with laid-off auto workers.
Didn't show up in Michael Moore's movie?
He didn't. He was, I think, made a little jealous by all of Mr. Moore's notoriety in the wake of that, and is maybe a little cynical about his intentions. But
yes, that's fine. I like Michael. He's a good what we call a crap disturber.
Right. Exactly. I'm a huge fan, and I think it's great to point to him as a wonderful product of Michigan.
Yeah.
In any case, so I spent a lot of time around my dad in Detroit in what are the not difficult to find, pretty roughed up, pretty scarred, quite impoverished neighborhoods of the city.
Yeah.
My stepmother's grandparents also lived, or I'm sorry, my stepmother's parents, so my sort of strangely affinal step-grandparents lived in Detroit also, in a small, very affluent enclave in the city called Indian Village.
Mm-hmm.
So I had this very kind of schizophrenic sense about Detroit on one hand, which actually, given the city and its incredible divisions, which are, of course, reflective of divisions across the country, was somehow appropriate, I think.
But you describe it as the most segregated city in America. I believe that's true.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, according to most indices, at least, it is. Mm-hmm. It's profoundly segregated. I mean, it's about 85% African American,
yeah.
and the whites and other ethnic minorities who live in and around the city live in very divided spaces. So
yeah.
I had this, I had a sense both for its poverty and for its past glory,
mm-hmm.
through my step grandparents who lived in this sort of beautiful mansion in Indian Village and got a new leased GM car every year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a pretty deep sense for
Cadillac or Buick.
Actually, they were Buicks.
Yeah,
they were Buicks for the most part.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's interesting the way people latched onto their brands.
Oh yeah,
I grew up in Cincinnati,
uh-huh.
and my dad was an Oldsmobile guy.
Oh, yeah.
And every 2 years, he'd get a new Oldsmobile.
Yeah.
That was just a pattern that he observed most of his life.
Yeah, yeah. No, right. Well, they're going to have to change their thinking about that.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Now, Luke, I told you off air that I have relatives in Detroit. My stepson's at Ann Arbor as a graduate student right now. And I was there in October for a few days. And just one little moment struck me, because I'm a radio guy. I was listening to WJR, which is
the big
radio station there. It's what we call a heritage station that's been dominant in the market for a long, long time.
Yeah.
They broadcast from the GM Tower, the Fisher Building,
right.
in downtown Detroit. And they telegraphed that at the top of the hour. It's WJR Detroit from the Fisher Building. And so I was listening, and I said, oh, yeah, the Fisher Building. And now the 6 o'clock news, brought to you by Detroit area Toyota dealers. and just that statement right there in a 10-second span.
Yeah.
Proud to be at the Fisher Building at the crumbling General Motors.
Right.
And brought to you by Toyota.
Yeah.
And that's one reflection of one of the major shifts in the economy there in Michigan.
Yeah.
But your book focuses on real people and the problems that they face. And you moved to Pingree Street. I have to ask why.
Well, Pingree Street is a great place to live if you're interested in understanding the lives of very ordinary African-American Detroiters. It is, it's a typical black neighborhood in the city, in that it is overrun with illegal drugs. The drug trade is on the streets, in the small businesses, and in people's houses. I was living in a house, it was two-family flat, as are most of the houses in African-American neighborhoods in Detroit. And, you know, there were some family members on the top floor and some on the bottom floor, or flat rather, and most members of that household were somehow involved in the drug trade. But
the matriarch opposed it all. She's a preacher, and she was the one running around with a belt.
That's right.
Chasing a 12-year-old who had some crack in his pocket.
That's right. Yeah, 12-year-old nephew Benjamin, who was at that point, still a high-voiced, prepubescent young kid who, as I describe in the book, you know, was very devoted to finding stray dogs in Detroit and bringing them home and attempting to domesticate them. And she found him actually tossing a bag of crack back and forth between his hands that somebody, some sort of slightly older person in the neighborhood had given to him to get off on the street. And that was one of many efforts. Her sort of looping the belt in her hand and chasing him out of the house when she discovered that was one of many efforts that she made to try to curtail the involvement of her immediate family in the drug trade. I mean, and this is a woman with a PhD. This is a woman who is a minister. This is a woman who is a pretty high-ranking public health official in the city. And she feels totally powerless in the face of the drug trade's prevalence in the city and the extent to which it had sort of woven its way through the lives of her immediate family. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of sort of interesting updates to that particular family. One is that she is actually deciding to move to Seattle to sort of salvage her own life in some ways, because it's been so traumatizing for her to watch all of her. She has five nephews. The book begins with a description of the shooting of one of her and death
funeral,
of one of her.
Yeah.
That's right, and funeral of one of her nephews. And I'm terribly sad to say that when I was actually a postdoc at Berkeley last year, I got a call from her, and I answered the phone, and she said, "Benjamin's dead." And this young man with whom I sort of begin the book had been shot on the front steps of the house. Mm. And wasn't even doing anything in the drug game at that point.
Right.
There had been a series of killings in the city more than a series of killings in the city, but a number of killings in our immediate neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And the flames of the fire that was burning between people who lived on the other side of Linwood, which is this big commercial avenue that's in the neighborhood, and our side of Linwood, those flames were fanned by an emergent practice among young people of committing sort of horrific violent crimes and then photographing them with their cell phones. So there had been a number of murders, and then photographs of those murders spread throughout the neighborhood and eventually led in ways that no one would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
To young Benjamin's murder. And actually that has something to do with my minister friend's eventual, I call her Esther in the book, her eventual decision to leave.
Luke Bergman with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Luke, one thing that struck me in the part of the book that I've read is you make a distinction between gangbangers and drug dealers, and they seem to be mutually exclusive. Explain.
Yeah, that's right. And that will strike listeners in California as maybe especially strange.
Because banging and slanging pretty much go together.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. They're hand in hand, fist in fist. And also, I think it'll strike viewers of The Wire as maybe a little bit strange. In Detroit, though, gang activity and drug dealing activity are talked about as very explicitly separate. Gangbanging is understood as child's play, ultimately. When you hear young people who are in the drug game and are trying to sort of come up in the drug game, or trying to build capital with which they imagine they might be able to do something in their lives in the absence of any kind of reasonable job market, fighting over the representation of colors just seems utterly ridiculous.
On one level, that's encouraging.
Yeah. No, right. Yeah. Right. These are not people without good sense. Mm-hmm. And I think that actually connects to one of the I think really important points that I try to make in this book, and that is that these are folks with very good sense. These are not people who are simply subcultural. They are not inhabitants of some kind of exotic, you know, dark urban jungle.
Yeah, lower life form.
Right, exactly. You know, and when we talk about drug dealers, we tend to talk about them in terms of, you know, sort of very reduced stereotypes.
Caricatures.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you know, they all have extremely sophisticated, complicated lives. And, you know, and the drug trade is something that young people in Detroit move in and out of in very fluid ways. And it's one of the significances of that is that it's a part of almost all aspects of people's lives mm-hmm. in Detroit. It's really sort of permeates their lives.
We're going to take a break and continue. Luke Bergman, his new book is Getting Ghost. It's out from New Press. He's appearing Wednesday night in Berkeley at the First Congregational Church on Channing, part of the Berkeley Arts and Letters series, 7:30 p.m. Wednesday night in Berkeley. We'll take a break and return. If you have a question or comment, you can call us 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372, The Peter B. Collins Show.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Do you love KRXA 540? Show your support for our radio station by placing a bumper sticker on the bumper of your vehicle. Click on the bumper sticker at KRXA540.com and think for yourself.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
KRXA 540 AM is the home of Cal State University Monterey Bay Basketball. Hi, this is Rob Ponce, the voice of the CSUMB Otters, inviting you to join KRXA as we bring you the best of NCAA Division II basketball with the CSUMB Otters.
The Otters are away again this weekend. Friday, Stanislaus. Saturday, Chico. It's Otter Basketball on KRXA.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after The Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Good afternoon. This is Hal with your KRXA 540 traffic report. We've got no incidents at this time on the roads. Everything's looking good. It's 56 degrees outside our studios here in San City under fair skies. There are a few high clouds depending on where you are in our listening area, Santa Cruz and Monterey counties, of course. Expect lows tomorrow morning around freezing inland, low 40s along the coast, and should get up into the 60s to low 70s throughout our area in the afternoon under beautiful sunny skies. Enjoy Peter B. coming right up on AM 540.
We're talking about Motown today, one of Detroit's finest, Aretha Franklin. I don't think the song's about Detroit, but she was there at the inaugural with that fancy hat that was made right there in Motown. Luke Bergman is with us. His new book is Getting Ghost, and it's a powerful look at young people who get involved in the drug trade in Detroit, and it is out from New Press. Luke, so much I want to talk to you about. I told you off air that I made a trip in Detroit to the Iraqi area. There was a radio network owned by the United Auto Workers that had the poor judgment to carry my program for several years. So I went to HQ, which was, I believe you helped me out, I think near 7th and Woodward. Mm-hmm. And I was driving solo, and I had a little direction, and I got there early. And so I circled about a four-block area. And what I saw was about every fourth house was occupied. The rest were boarded up, burned out, lawns overgrown, dead cars parked in the front yard. And the neglect and just downright destruction that was visible in a part of people's daily lives just left a searing impression. And there was the Basra Bakery or Basra Office Supply, Baghdad Bakery.
Right.
And in the early part of the book, you describe a liquor store where the Iraqis who own it are behind a secure plexiglass, like a, you know, a gas station.
Right.
And they really have no interaction with their customers who are buying 40s and booze and a loaf of bread.
Right, right, yeah.
So there's this bizarre mixing of the races and segregation all at the same time.
Yeah, that's right. No, it's an extremely sort of visceral experience. And I think you describe it really well to inhabit the spaces that have emerged over Detroit's sort of kind of long history of deindustrialization and of racial segregation. And yeah, I ended up writing a great deal about small retail spaces, because they really are at this point the central kind of loci of racial tension in the city, because the overwhelming preponderance of the neighborhoods are black neighborhoods, but there is almost zero black small business community in Detroit, and that's a kind of dynamic that that you can see elsewhere, sort of a little reminiscent of Los Angeles with all of the Korean shop owners and some tensions there between Koreans and African Americans. And I think the difference in Detroit is just that it is so stark, so pervasive.
And in the all white suburbs where I go, there's great fear and loathing. And they watch ABC, Channel 7, and that coverage led them to, this real angst against Kwame Kilpatrick.
Yeah.
And he earned it, right. I have to say, from my comfortable seat here in California.
Yeah.
But it's got to be bizarre because, Dennis Archer wasn't the greatest mayor. I mean, there has been corruption there with African-Americans at the top for many years.
Right.
And so it just enhances the segregation of attitude and the reality of segregation.
Yeah, yeah. No, Kwame Kilpatrick's sort of rise and fall have been so incredible. Incredibly interesting and tragic for the city of Detroit. I actually I was living in the Bay Area until this past summer when I was given an opportunity to move back to Detroit. And I moved back to Detroit just as the recent case against Kwame Kilpatrick was sort of culminating, and he was hanging onto office for dear life. There had been, for anybody who didn't hear about this scandal, he had had an affair with his chief of staff, and they had text messaged one another all sorts of
And the Free Press got the text messages and put them in the paper.
Exactly.
And then he claimed innocence. And
that's right.
But there's millions of dollars in legal fees that were run up by the bankrupt city to try to defend him from cops who had tried to blow the whistle, and he squashed them.
Well, he spent $9 million of the city's money quieting cops whom he had fired because they had the dirt on him.
Yeah.
The Free Press ended up getting the dirt eventually.
Luke, let me stop you there because we only have a minute remaining,
sure.
And I want to give you a chance to sum up the message in your book and why my listeners should read it.
I think that one of the reasons it makes sense to read about Detroit right now is that that, you know, as we dip further into this economic crisis, Detroit is talked about a great deal. It is an emblem, in a way, for how bad things can really get. But the way that it's being talked about in most major media is as a sort of as a referent to an industry, not as a referent to a people or a real place. When people talk about the Detroit bailout, they're not talking about the bailout of the city. They're talking about the bailout of an industry. And that actually only adds to the sort of psychic taxation that it is to live in the city. I mean, where there are not just, boarded up houses, but expansive fields that are just, run around by sidewalks, but otherwise empty. And I think remembering that there are over 800,000 people living in this very tragic city is extremely important right now.
Luke Bergman, his book is Getting Ghost from New Press. I recommend it, and I'm going to read it all when I get a copy. Luke, pleasure to meet you. We'll talk again.
Thank you so much.
All right. Coming up next, California's Lieutenant Governor here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Save us from the art. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. The stimulus plan heading to the president could eventually cost, with interest, $1.1 trillion. Pretty amazing for a country that can't meet operating expenses as it is.
The Democrats in Congress are building a bridge to bankruptcy.
And she's got a point. In the past year, the national debt has increased by $1.4 trillion without this bill. But what do the Republicans want instead? Tax cuts, of course.
Tax cuts, tax cuts, tax cuts. Tax cuts never built a single highway. Tax cuts never built a transit system.
Oh, but the most controversial provision was the art.
$50 million for the National Endowment for the Arts.
Those artists.
What is $50 million for the National Endowment for the Arts going to do to create jobs in Indiana?
I guess Indiana finally kicked out all its artists.
$50 million on the National Endowment of the Arts.
A stimulus bill that would sculpt us to death. But President Obama's visit to the Hill yesterday must have had some effect, because I noticed that both sides did agree on one thing. Whether it's spending or tax cuts, they have to borrow the entire amount. In fact, the reason the Republicans want tax cuts is because it would shove the borrowed money out the door even faster than building highways.
Only 7% of the plan's infrastructure spending would be spent by the end of the first fiscal year, and only 65% of the total package would be spent by 2010.
The only debate is over how best to spend like a drunken sailor. In fact, the only difference between the drunken sailor and the 111th Congress is that the sailor actually has to pay his bar tab. Now this...
Whether you run a small business or a big enterprise, you face similar IT challenges every day, including network security, user productivity, network and application performance, and data storage and email retrieval. That's why over 70,000 businesses like yours count on Barracuda Networks to solve these challenges.
Right out of the box, without IT expertise, at a price that any business can afford.
Call 888-ANTI-SPAM for a free 30-day trial of any of our security, productivity, or storage appliances.
That's 888-ANTI-SPAM.
Or see for yourself at Barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio.
Just because gas prices are low doesn't mean our troubles are over. Mother Nature's getting hot under the collar, our economy is in the toilet, and we're spending billions overseas to fill our tanks. Both kinds. Did you know local people have sold locally made fuel on the Central Coast since 2002? At the Green Station, our biodiesel is ASTM approved and is made from restaurant fryer oil collected right here. Did you know that electric cars were first built in the 1830s? Almost 200 years later, and our government still has plenty of money for oil wars, but not enough to jumpstart our renewable energy economy. 70% of all car trips in America can be done in a neighborhood electric vehicle. This will help save our planet and save you money. Zen neighborhood electric cars are at the Green Station now, and they can be charged by the sun. From local biodiesel to electric cars, bikes, and scooters, renewable transportation and a more peaceful world are just a call away. Call the Green Station today in Santa Cruz at 831-425-9100. Major credit cards are now accepted. That's 831-425-9100. Again, that's 831-425-9100.
Sometimes things just make sense.
Sure, like buying a scooter when gas prices go crazy.
Or putting Sharp business equipment in your office.
How does that make sense?
It makes sense to have the number one digital copier in America working for you, right?
Sure.
Well, that's how it makes sense.
I get it, but...
Here, try this.
Since 1981, this family-owned business has been about one thing, results, which is why Tri-County Business Systems is a Sharp dealer. Sharp is technology-driven, featuring OSA, Open Systems Architecture. You can customize applications that promote efficient workflow. And because they're built to last, your total cost of ownership is reduced for long-term results. If you're a QuickBooks user, Sharp's OSA system allows you to quickly scan directly into your client's folder right from the machine. So call Tri-County Business Systems at 758-1474 and learn more today. Tri-County Business Systems, 758-1474. Solutions that connect with you. Tri-County Business Systems.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Check your library. Is it still open?
Closing all the libraries, they're closing all the libraries, they're closing all the libraries, they're locking hallowed doors, they're closing all the libraries, doubling my parking fees, they're building prisons in old schoolyards.
The Golden State of California is underwater. We're out of cash. People who file for tax refunds may not see it for months, if at all. Construction projects up and down the state have been halted. And despite what we heard from that crackpot spokesperson for the Republican Party last week, I haven't seen any signs of Republicans compromising and willing to accept tax increases to close the budget shortfall here in California. John Garamendi is our Democratic Lieutenant Governor, the top statewide office holder. He's on the front lines of this battle. John, welcome back to our program today.
Always good to be with you, Peter, even in this rather morbid situation.
Well, before we get into that, a little inspiration. We talked to you on Inauguration Day, and you had a bird's-eye perch on the rooftop of the Canadian Embassy. And it was really great to talk with you, and the vibe, as we say, coming from Garamendi was pretty special.
Well, I was and remain very, very excited about Obama and what's going on in Washington. They're actually doing things in Washington. There's a debate going on about how to get it all done, but they're actually going to pass an enormously important piece of legislation. Obama's leading, and what he's done, you could sense it that day. And in the last week and a half, it's actually happening. Change is actually happening on every front, environmental, on international relations, on the war, and on the stimulus. We've got a president here that's an action president, a real action president.
Now,
to others that may say they're action, but haven't done much.
Now, John Garamendi, your main job is to take the governor's post here in California if he's unable to serve. And when he leaves the state, you are made governor temporarily. Do you have any dreams at night hoping that Arnold will just say, well, I'm going back to Austria. John, you take over.
Well, I'll put it to you this way, Peter, that I would love to be governor right now because I can see how this problem can be solved. I know that there are votes in the legislature, Republican votes, that can be obtained, but the governor really has to sit down and negotiate with those people, as do the leaders in the legislature. I can see a way in which we can put together a tax package that would not harm the economy, but actually help the economy by keeping people employed, by providing the money for our education system, which, after all, is the fuel for the economy tomorrow and the days beyond.
Yeah.
All of that stuff is possible, but I find myself rather frustrated in knowing that it can be done and watching how badly this thing is playing itself out.
And I made a reference last week. I got an email from the California Republican Party, a guy named Ruben something or other, and it was one of these distraction efforts where he was picking up on the fact that the California prison system is in such disrepair that a federal judge has put the health care system of the prison department into receivership. And the gentleman, Clark Kelso, who's now in charge of that effort, has presented a plan to try to rectify the problems, because it's not just an inconvenience to prisoners. Inmates are actually dying because of the poor health care that they receive. And this becomes a very critical baseline human rights issue, in my view. So the tab for that is huge. The initial tab that he's presenting is about $8 billion. It's mostly for new facilities to pay more to doctors and nurses and medical professionals to try to lift us from a third or fourth world gulag to something that we can at least have some respect for. And so the Republicans cherry-picked that in that massive proposal, there is a call for yoga for prisoners. Now, I happen to practice yoga, and it's a wonderful thing, and it doesn't cost anything. You follow a videotape or you read a book. I go to a class and pay $10. But, they tried to distract people from their radical minority rule efforts to block a resolution to our budget crisis by saying, oh, the Democrats want to give yoga to prisoners. Well, it's not even a Democratic proposal. It's a total red herring. And so I got this guy on, and I beat him up left and right. And the bottom line that I said to him was that the Republican position has gone from annoying to irresponsible, and now it's downright criminal, because they will not step up to their responsibilities to the people of California, and they remain loyal to the tax cutter Grover Norquist.
Well, you've hit several things right on the head. The prison issue is in the hands of the receiver, and frankly, I think the receiver's made some mistakes here. I think that his plan is far too much. Whether it's yoga, that's as you say, that's really not material in terms of the cost. But here's where we really could use public-private partnerships. We've got a lot of hospitals, nursing homes, and other facilities that are vacant or partially vacant near the prisons. Mm-hmm. And those, in my view, should be used in a public-private partnership. We may have to build a fence around the outside, put the locks on the outside of the doors, but all of that can be done far, far cheaper than spending $8 billion on these facilities, particularly when you've got 6 million Californians that don't have access to health care. So it's not that we absolutely must provide adequate medical services to prisoners and mental services. That must be done. But I think Mr. Kelso has gone far, far too overboard. The other issue, and you're absolutely correct, that has nothing to do with the immediate budget problem.
Yeah.
It is an issue, and it's a big issue, but it is not an immediate budget problem, because nobody in Sacramento at the state capitol is planning on spending money on that issue in this budget discussion.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that you raised is also critical, and that is the Republican Party in the legislature, unanimously right now, is derelict in their responsibilities. We have a serious crisis that can only be addressed with new revenues, taxes, and spending cuts and reform. There's very little talk around this building about reform, but we really need to always strive for greater efficiency and effectiveness in all of our programs, whether they're education or prisons or whatever. And the second thing is that the governor was very, very late in coming to the reality of what the problem was. The problem at the state budget actually started his very first day in office when he eliminated $4 billion from the state budget.
Per year.
And that was the car, motor vehicle and lieu fee, the car tax.
Mm-hmm.
And so that whole grew and grew and grew. The second thing he did in the first year in office was to, instead of going straight at the problem and solving it with cuts or new revenues, he borrowed money.
Yep.
Now, it is a very bad mistake for any business, and a horrible mistake for government, state government, to to borrow money for ongoing operations. In fact, the
John, what he did was in public, dramatically, he cut up the credit cards, and then privately, he went and got a payday loan. You know, the
exactly
highest
right.
usury rate you can find.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened. And the credit cards are maxed out, and now he's going to sell the lottery, which, again, is just another form of borrowing. To the tune, his proposal, $40 billion, $10 billion of that is borrowing. $5 billion from the lottery and another $5 billion from, again, another credit card that he thinks he can find. What that does, it just simply pushes the problem into the next year and makes it worse.
Now, one of the other things that's been proposed is a raid on Proposition 10. And most people don't know about this, but it's a 50-cent tobacco tax that Rob Reiner passed about 98 or 99. Generates about $700 million a year, and it's earmarked for early childhood development. And I will disclose here that I'm a beneficiary of that. I produce some radio programs that are funded in part by the Prop 10 revenues. And so I am biased about it, and I think that it's a very good investment in the future health and development of people born here in California. And they want to hold a special election, which would cost $50 to $60 million. Then they want to raid part of the funds from Proposition 10, let's call it half, $350 million. But they wouldn't realize this until at least 2 or 3 years out, because they would have to dismantle the whole system that's been set up. And so this is one of those efforts where they can generate a small amount of revenue that won't come near to closing the huge gap that's been created. It will be a disinvestment in the future of California's precious resource, human beings. And they'll be able to say, well, no new taxes.
Well, in fact, it's less than 1% of the problem. So you're not going to get very far in solving the problem with that particular gambit. There are a couple of other gambits, but you raised a point right at the end of your little comment there that's really important, and that is this budget crisis is a moment for California to make a decision about what we want to be. What do we want California to be? Do we want to be the leadership state with a very well-educated population? Do we want a state that provides the basic services to have a sane, safe community? Those issues are very, very much in play. The budgets that are being discussed here in the state capitol today and the one that passed in September starve the education system, to the point where we will fail to have a well-educated workforce. We're already 47th in how much money we spend on it, and we are increasingly approaching 50 on how well our students do. We are literally getting what we paid for, which is a bad result because we're not willing to pay for it. There is no more important investment than to invest in the kids, because those students will soon be in the workforce, and if they are well-educated, they will be able to propel the California economy forward. But right now, 40% of the students in many of our urban centers are dropping out. 25% statewide are dropping out of high school. That's a huge anchor on the economy tomorrow and in the years ahead, because those students that drop out will not be able to have a job in an advanced economy. They will be an anchor on the economy. Social, economic problems will be generated by those students that drop out. We know these things. Right now, today, tomorrow, the next 2 days, Californians are making a decision, and if we fail to raise the revenues, we starve the education system, we close down the emergency rooms, we deny people health care, the health in our population will decline, and we will have a series of problems that we will take a generation to recover from.
And, John, I would make the case that California's economic future depends on two key elements, productivity and innovation. And those do not occur if you don't have a well-educated workforce. That's why we have to import so many scientists and engineers from other countries.
Exactly correct. And innovation and productivity, those are key words. We want to build a whole new energy system for California, a green energy system. That takes a re-educated workforce and a newly educated workforce. We want innovation. We're not going to get it. I just left the State University Board of Trustees meeting. 10,000 students did not get into the state university system because the legislature and the governor refused to fund that program just to maintain the present level of student population. Mm-hmm. University of California, 2,300 students will not be entering the University of California next fall. And that number is going to be another 2,300 in the year after and another 2,300 in the year after that, unless we invest. And it is a critical investment. Peter, we've got a $1.5 trillion economy in California. We have a $15 billion hole in this year's budget and another $20 billion in next year's budget. So we get up somewhere near $40 billion.
And revenues are probably going to decline more sharply than the current projections.
Exactly right. To fill that hole, $15 billion a year, that's 1% of the wealth that we generate every year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question for California is, are we willing to take 1% of our wealth and invest it in education? And that's the question. Are we willing to do that? It's not 10%. It's not 20 or 50%. It's 1% of the wealth of this that we generate in California annually and invest it in education, invest it in emergency rooms so that when we crash our automobile, there's some place that they could take us in the ambulance. These are the fundamentals of life in California. We are an extraordinary state. Even in the situation we're in today, we have incredible diversity in our economy, but we're continuing to starve the fuel that economy needs to compete internationally.
We're going to take a break and return. California's Lieutenant Governor, Democrat John Garamendi, with us. He's got an important meeting on Thursday regarding offshore drilling. We'll talk about that as we continue. Your questions are welcome. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, The Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Good afternoon. This is Hal with your KRXA 540 traffic report. We've got no incidents at this time on the roads. Everything's looking good. It's 56 degrees outside our studios here in Sand City under fair skies. There are a few high clouds depending on where you are in our listening area, Santa Cruz and Monterey counties, of course. Expect lows tomorrow morning around freezing inland, low 40s along the coast, and should get up into the 60s to low 70s throughout our area in the afternoon under beautiful sunny skies. Enjoy Peter B. coming right up on AM 540.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Cruz. Come listen to the new Jennifer Cruz Show, Saturdays at noon, where we will get into it, I-N-T-U-I-T. We'll talk about intuition, emotions, and passions, all the invisible aspects of each and every one of us that nobody talks about. The Jennifer Cruz Show is made possible by Weiland Galleries in Carmel and Water Me Well Inner Healing Apparel. Visit watermewell.com. See you Saturdays at noon on the new Jennifer Cruz Show. Remember, Saturdays at noon, only on AM 540. Get into it.
Do you love KRXA 540? Show your support for our radio station by placing a bumper sticker on the bumper of your vehicle. Click on the bumper sticker at KRXA540.com and think for yourself.
My name is R.J. Moyer, President of Family Heritage Management Services. I am a retirement specialist, and I protect my clients' money, and I can guarantee an income for life. We don't recommend stocks, mutual funds, or variable annuities. These are risky securities. With securities, you have unlimited upside, but you also have unlimited downside. Our clients do not lose money in negative markets. Do you have a multi-generational IRA? Why not? It's been your right since 2001. Don't let Uncle Sam be your biggest beneficiary because your banker or broker is sleeping at the wheel. Call us right now at 831-794-8485 to receive your free brochure. We will then set up your free IRA and retirement checkup in our Salinas location. Call 831-794-8485. It's a new market, and it's time for a change. Call 831-794-8485. If you transfer your IRA, 401k, or any of your retirement accounts today, we will add 10% to your full account value. $100,000 becomes $110,000, $400,000 becomes $440,000, $700,000 becomes $770,000. It's a new market. It's time for a change. Call 831-794-8485.
There's more than one side to every issue. In fact, There's usually more than two sides. On Thursday nights from 9 to 11, we examine issues from every angle on our show called A Different Perspective. Sometimes we have guests bring a viewpoint that isn't often heard elsewhere. Other times, we'll discuss our different perspectives on the issue of the day. Either way, call in and give us your different perspective. Join us, Mark Leonard, Tony Rudy, Billy Sunshine, and me, Jack Hart, on A Different Perspective, Thursday nights at 9, here on KRXA 540.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. We're talking with California Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi, Democrat. And John served in the Interior Department under Cecil Andrus when Bill Clinton was president. Ken Salazar, the most recent senator from Colorado, is now taking up the reins there at Interior, and he's going to review the Republican plans for offshore drilling, and he's sounding a very reasonable theme on that. And John Garamendi sits on the State Lands Commission. I believe there's a meeting in Santa Barbara on Thursday, John, where you will take up issues of lifting the state ban on offshore drilling. And I would like you to take a barrel of oil and dip a couple of birds in it to that commission meeting. And remind them of the brutal oil spill off Santa Barbara, about 25, 30 years ago?
Actually, today is the 40th anniversary of that oil spill.
Really?
We have grown older faster than you thought.
Yeah. Wow.
But today's the 40th anniversary. Yeah, we will tomorrow take up a proposal to have a new oil lease on a new oil field off the Santa Barbara Channel. Actually, it's near Point Arguello.
Okay.
And the Vandenberg Air Force Base. That, and to do it the day after the Santa Barbara oil spill. I have very serious concerns about this in two areas. First, we need to understand that the environmental community in Santa Barbara does support this, which really speaks to the very extraordinary effort that was made by both the company and the environmental groups to reach an accommodation. However, there are two things that I'm very concerned about, and therefore I oppose the proposed oil lease. First of all, it sends, if California approves this, which would be the first lease in 40 years of an offshore oil field, it would send a signal to Washington that California approves offshore oil drilling. Well, that may be the argument that will stop the reimposition of the federal moratorium, which is a very, very serious problem. Now, the federal moratorium ran out because of the opposition of the president and the Republicans in Congress. So it expired, and right now the Department of Interior, where I did work during the Babbitt years and Clinton period.
Oh, sorry, I got your secretary wrong, yeah.
Yeah, but you had the right department.
Yep.
We were prevented by federal law and presidential edict from issuing new federal leases off the California coast and off the coast of much of America. That expired, and the federal government could issue leases. Now, I don't believe that Salazar or the President Obama want to do that off the California coast. But nonetheless, the argument could be made that, well, see, California is issuing a lease, so we shouldn't do a moratorium and we should do federal leases. I don't want that to happen. Secondly, we have to move away from oil and natural gas as the fundamental fuel for California. Now, there will be new revenue, perhaps $1 billion or maybe even $3 or $4 billion of revenue over the next 17 years coming from this lease. I believe that money must be used to support renewable energy programs, to subsidize renewable energy, solar, wind, to build the power grids that are necessary, to do the smart grid systems, to do the research that we need. Here's an opportunity to take money that comes from the production of oil and use it to solve the fundamental environmental crisis of this century, that is global climate change and California's role as a major polluter of the environment.
Now, let me clarify. Does this suggest that you think you'll be outvoted on the Lands Commission and the lease will be granted, and you're saying that if it's granted, you want the royalties earmarked for renewables?
Well, it's going to take a state law to accomplish the task, because the current state law says that all the revenue coming from this must go into the general fund. Mm. Earlier, we talked about $350 million. In this case, we're probably talking about $100 million in the first couple of years or less. And so it's really not going to solve the budget crisis that we're presently in. But we can use that money very, very effectively to transition the California economy from oil to renewables. And that's what I think we have to do. We need, it's going to take a lot of money. It's not going to be cheap to move the California economy to wean ourselves from oil. It's going to take money. Here's an opportunity for a pot of money to be used that comes from oil to be specifically used to move us away from oil. So will it pass tomorrow? I don't know. I'm not able to talk to my other commissioners. That would break the law. The Brown Act requires that everything we do in public. So I've not talked to Comptroller John Chung or to the governor's representative, although I noticed the newspaper saying the governor does support this.
And why does the environmental community in Santa Barbara support it after a 40-year experience?
Well, they've done a good job of negotiating something that's very important, and that is that in 17 years, the platforms and the oil drilling in, off three platforms would cease. And some of the infrastructure, pipelines and other infrastructure that supports that drilling would be retired. Now, and that's good. I mean, that is a very important thing, and I commend them for getting that done. There is, however, a problem that the State Lands Commission staff sees, and that is that the guarantees to accomplish that are not ironclad guarantees. And in 2022, there could be a circumstance, for example, a vote by the new commission at that time, that is my replacement or whoever's lieutenant governor and the controller and the finance director, could vote to continue the lease. And the federal government has great sway here, so the staff doesn't see a ironclad way of guaranteeing that the deal would actually take place and the leases and the production would actually stop.
All right, John, don't forget the sailors. I'm a sailor. I've gone from Santa Barbara to the Channel Islands, and those oil platforms are a real nuisance and a danger to navigation. I got to run, but thank you for joining us and keep fighting for us.
Always a pleasure. Take care, Peter.
John Garamendi on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Bonjour, this is Véronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy two bottles, you get one bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine, you can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Despite President Obama's efforts to win their support, not a single Republican voted yay as the House approved an $819 billion economic stimulus plan. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports.
The huge measure is designed to put people to work by spending government money on everything from computerizing health records to repairing schools. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
Each month, 500,000 Americans will lose their jobs. We simply cannot wait.
Republicans like Paul Ryan agree, but offered an alternative with much bigger tax cuts, especially for higher-income individuals and businesses.
Here's a better way. Twice as many jobs.
Republicans say they appreciated President Obama reaching out to them on this stimulus bill, but still voted against it. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Boeing, which had already announced plans to cut 4,500 jobs, now says it will raise the total to 10,000 because the airplane business is so bad.
Right now, the company is basically just directly linked to the consumer demand for travel. And that downturn is a global phenomenon and a very painful one.
Aviation analyst Richard Abulafia. America Online is cutting up to 700 jobs. Starbucks says it will close another 300 stores, and General Motors will shut down its Jobs Bank, the program that provides workers with most of their pay and benefits when they're laid off. WWJ Radio's Jeff Gilbert has more on that.
Instead of going into the Jobs Bank, laid-off GM workers will have to head for the unemployment office. Now, with GM supplemental benefits, they'll still get about 72% of their pay, but GM spokesman Tony Sapienza says it will save the company money. Now, the deal giving GM federal loans requires concessions from the union.
We'll still be discussing a number of issues with our partners as we go forward and work toward becoming a viable company for the long term.
The UAW ended the Jobs Bank at Chrysler on Monday. Jeff Gilbert, CBS News, Detroit.
The Los Angeles Times is reporting that Roman Catholic Cardinal Roger Mahoney is the target of a federal grand jury investigation. At issue is whether Mahoney and other church leaders committed fraud by failing to protect parishioners from pedophile priests. Federal investigators now say the salmonella outbreak linked to peanut products has sickened more than 500 people nationwide, killing at least eight. The outbreak was traced back to a processing plant in Blakely, Georgia, which has closed. But now, officials say there were earlier contaminations. The Peanut Corporation of America continued to ship products even after they were found to contain salmonella. Connecticut Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro thinks it's a crime.
The regulatory system is broken in this area. What I'm doing is contacting the Department of Justice to request an investigation into the behavior of this corporation, determine whether their actions warrant criminal prosecution.
The recall has been expanded to include everything produced at the plant in the past 2 years. On Wall Street, a good day. The Dow Industrial's up 200 points to 8375. This is CBS News.
All right, construction crews. Everybody ready?
Ready in Chicago.
Montgomery.
Honolulu. Oh, who's in Honolulu?
It's Tim from Boston. I just got transferred to Hawaii. Wicked good weather they got here.
Buy one Motorola i576 phone for $69.99. Get up to four free with Sprint, the fastest national push-to-talk network. Call 1-800-NEXTEL-9. Only on the Now Network. Fastest based on initial call setup time. Offers for eligible business accounts only. See Sprint stores for availability. Ends 4/18/09. Subject to two-year agreement. Up to $36 activation, $200 early termination fees. Credit approval and deposit per line. Restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. You know, there's never been a better time to own my new Orrick XL, because now the Orrick you've always wanted has a new low price. The amazingly powerful, incredibly lightweight new Orrick XL starts at only $299. Try it risk-free for 30 days. If you don't love it, you don't keep it. Call 1-877-ORRICK-21. That's 1-877-ORRICK-21. Or visit Orrick.com to find the Orrick store closest to you.
Iraq and Afghanistan were the main topics today when President Obama got his first briefing at the Pentagon. He came out saying he faces some difficult decisions. The president's expected to decide soon on a plan for withdrawing from Iraq. CBS News correspondent Kimberly Dozier has been looking into it.
The key phrase in Mr. Obama's pledge about Iraq is that he wants to withdraw combat troops within 16 months, depending on what happens on the ground. Defense officials I've spoken to say that is doable, depending on how the provincial elections go there coming up this weekend. But that still means potentially leaving behind tens of thousands of American support troops, doing things like providing Iraqi services they don't have, like satellite and air support, and training for Iraqi security forces. Kimberly Dozier, CBS News, the Pentagon.
Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, says they've presented the president with options that would accomplish a responsible drawdown that preserves the security gains we've made in Iraq. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Two drivers, two very different stories, heading home on a dark evening.
I hit the open road.
I hit the open road.
A deer popped out of nowhere. I panicked.
I saw a deer in the road. I slowed down.
I jerked the wheel. I wish I could have seen it.
I drove around it and was home before the next song on the radio.
With Silver Star headlights from Sylvania, you'll see more of the road ahead. Remember, headlights dim over time. Replace them before you are left in the dark. Visit your automotive retailer and choose the whitest, brightest light. Silver Star headlights from Sylvania.
We just saw a fantastic football party, ladies and gentlemen, and here's the MVP, Elaine. How'd you make tonight such a success?
I joined Sam's Club.
Sam's Club?
That's right, Jim. They gave me a $10 gift card for becoming a new member, and I won with savings on all my food and beverages. Plus, my husband found a TV at a terrific price.
Well, there you have it, folks. Her secret is Sam's Club. Not a member? Join by February 1st and receive a $10 gift card. Restrictions apply. See the member services desk at your local Sam's Club for details.
Love.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
We're heading into the free speech zone. Your calls and comments, welcome at 888-5-PETER-B. But first...
Well, she's all you'd ever want. She's the kind I'd like to flaunt and take to dinner.
Ah, but she'll pay. For herself, anyway.
She always knows her place. She's got style. She's got grace. She's a winner.
And she's a former federal prosecutor working to clean up the swamp inside the Beltway in Washington. Melanie Sloan joins me from Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. They're called Crew. Hi, Melanie.
Hi, Peter. I thought in all this time you might have forgotten about my song.
Nope. It's still here. I'm not the world's biggest Tom Jones fan, but it's fun to hear it once in a while.
Once in a while.
I do have to say. Well, you've been the sheriff there, and now there's a new boss in town, Barack Obama. And I give him high marks for early moves with executive orders to open up government. The remarks he made last week in saying that when you're inclined to keep things secret, ask yourself if you really need to, and you should err on the side of disclosure wherever possible. He is removing the blocks to Freedom of Information Act requests, and he's trying to put a lot of stuff online, to the chagrin of some journalists, by the way, who feel that the White House is kind of going around the media. That's a story for another day. But tell me your thoughts about the sea change, and if you think that Obama will really follow through on the commitments that he's made to date.
Can I just say that I'm a little disappointed to tell you that my thoughts aren't quite as positive as yours.
Mm-hmm.
So when the ethics order first came out, we thought it was great. On the very first day in office, President Obama issued an order saying there were going to be higher ethics in the office, and there was a whole long litany of things they were going to do. They also said some terrific things about the Freedom of Information Act, but there was a new commitment to transparency, and they also said that they would not be honoring executive privilege requests from past presidents, all of which sounded terrific to us, and we had only good things to say about it.
Okay.
Well, so ever since that, and that's only a short week ago, after Mr. Obama announced the ethics initiative where he said that they wouldn't be hiring lobbyists in the administration, in the top echelons of the administration, all I seem to do is hear about, like, the lobbyist a day that they're hiring. William Lynn, who's a Raytheon lobbyist, defense contractor, who's now going to be the deputy secretary of the Pentagon.
Right.
And then Mark Patterson, who is the Goldman Sachs lobbyist, who's now going to be the chief of staff at the Treasury Department, are two of the most serious and glaring examples.
Mm-hmm.
And what the Obama folks have said is, well, they have a provision in this ethics rule saying they can give a waiver. So, although they said no lobbyists, they can waive that whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
So then my view is, okay, then what's the point of the rule? You didn't really mean it. Why have a rule that you're not going to abide by? And so maybe you need to change your rule, and maybe also you should stop bashing all lobbyists, since apparently you yourselves find it necessary to hire lobbyists from time to time, and I understand there have been at least 12 of them so far in the first week.
Mm.
So I find that a little disappointing, and then I hear also today Robert Gibbs, the president's spokesperson, has said, well, good government groups have approved the waiver process, and I'm thinking, well, I don't actually know which good government groups those are. They didn't name any, and it wasn't us, and it wasn't Public Citizen, as it wasn't the public, the Project on Government Oversight. Some, and then when people call him on stuff like that, he has a tendency to say, well, no comment.
Mm, okay. Now, I have not been able to find out enough information, for example, about William Lynn and what skill set he brings to the Pentagon that is so indispensable that they want to waive these rules.
Yeah, me neither.
Do you have any insight into that?
I don't. I hear he's a smart, bright, articulate guy, and I hear the Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates, thinks he's important and would be great.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to imagine that the only possible person who could have that job is someone who is a Raytheon defense contractor. But if that's who you really want, then maybe, again, you shouldn't have a rule saying we can't hire lobbyists and that we should stop saying lobbyists are bad people.
But can you support a waiver under any circumstances if there's adequate disclosure, if, you know, he is watchdogged to make sure that he doesn't end up, benefiting his former employer or clients?
Well, that, of course, is the other part of that. They've said if somebody has been a lobbyist within the past 2 years, they can't lobby, they can't deal with the particular matters which they've been involved. But if you were at Raytheon and you're going to be the defense deputy secretary, I don't know how you're going to avoid Raytheon issues. And certainly if you were the one of the chief lobbyists for Goldman Sachs and you're the chief of staff to Treasury, how is it you're going to avoid every single thing that Goldman Sachs touched, which is the entire market? And how are you going to involve when the economy is in a shambles and we're talking about the TARP plan? And Goldman Sachs is integrally involved in that. It's literally impossible for those two people to take those jobs and avoid the particular matters with which they were involved for private industry.
Yeah. Now, do you have a take on Timothy Geithner? He was confirmed as Treasury Secretary, and there, you know, was some dialogue, shall we say, in the committee, basically distracted by a tax issue, which I think is, you know, worth reporting, but not a showstopper. To me, the real issue is that Geithner has been at the center of the failed bailout efforts to date, and you know, his history is of a deregulating, pro-capitalist, rah-rah Wall Street kind of guy, and so you know, the very conflicts that you described for Mark Patterson appear to apply largely to the newly confirmed Treasury Secretary.
Right. And let me also say that I don't find that tax issue quite so minor. People lose their jobs at the IRS for not paying taxes, and Mr. Geithner now gets to be in charge of the entire Treasury not paying taxes. And I don't know why he, but it's okay for both he and Mr. Rangel, the chairman of Ways and Means, also Tax Writing Committee, to be the only two people in America for whom not paying your taxes is somehow acceptable. So, okay, we've got that as an aside. Mr. Geithner is also apparently getting close to a $500,000 severance package from the Fed, which I have read about and can't begin to fathom. Part of it is for comp time and vacation time that he didn't take, but part of it is his actual severance package from the Fed. I don't know why you should get a severance package leaving one federal job to go to another willingly. Severance is usually reserved for people who are fired, so that too seems distressing. You know, I can't get excited about Mr. Geithner, but you know, I'm willing to give Mr. Obama the benefit of the doubt that somehow he is the best qualified person, and clearly the only reason the Republicans allowed him to be confirmed is they are afraid of considered the folks who stood in the way of the economic recovery, which Democrats would certainly suggest if they hadn't confirmed Mr. Geithner.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your critical comments here. I think it's important because, you know, we've seen that the Senate confirmation process is a pretty empty one. No matter who is in the White House or who controls the majority in the Senate and who chairs the committees. And I personally am chagrined that they really have raced to rubber stamp most of the cabinet posts, and that the issues, while I do take your point about his tax problem, it has been disclosed. He did pay it, and certainly he's gotten beaten up for it. I don't think it's central to the economic recovery, and that's, you know, what I consider the higher priority. But that said, I really think that we have to allow this confirmation process to go a little slower, to delve into more detail, and to give us a real evaluation of these candidates, because I'm not that thrilled with many of the cabinet appointments that Obama has made, and at minimum, I'd like a full airing of the issues before these people are just confirmed and sent to work.
It's worrisome if Congress isn't going to take both its confirmation responsibilities and its oversight responsibilities seriously. Just because it's now, and this is always a fear, when we have one-party rule, are the Democrats going to hold Mr. Obama to a high standard, the same high standard they tried to hold Mr. Bush to? And it's a concern.
Yeah. Melanie, next I want to talk about John Conyers, who has renewed his subpoena for Karl Rove, ordered him to appear as early as next Monday. And Rove seems to want to try to cling to some claim of executive privilege, and I heard he's actually asking the Obama White House to sustain the empty position that Bush had put out there, given that they were claiming executive privilege after Rove left the White House, after he could possibly be directly advising the president in an official capacity. So how can he make any claim of an extension of executive privilege when it really wasn't well-founded even 6 months ago?
Well, I think this is particularly interesting in light of, again, a new Obama executive order issued on the first day of his administration saying that they wouldn't go to bat for executive privilege claims made by previous administrations. And I think that's it was in light of that executive order that Mr. Conyers said, well, okay, we'll try again with Mr. Rove. And Mr. Rove is saying it's not a new executive privilege claim. He's trying to say it's still the same old executive privilege claim I was claiming before. But now the Obama folks are saying they're not going to defend that. So it'll be very interesting. I expect Mr. Rove to have a private lawyer, and perhaps Mr. Bush could also intervene in this case with his own private lawyer, not the Justice Department, to try and say he has an executive privilege claim. So this could be a case headed for a legal battle.
Al Gonzalez is available.
Gonzalez is available, and he just continues to be the embarrassment he always has been.
And what is the status of the missing Bush-era White House emails? There was a flurry of activity during the last few days of the administration.
There was, and I have to say, again, this is a case where we're not so sure how the Obama folks are coming out. In the last couple of days of the administration, Crew had a big court victory where a court held that there was that all of the things like the computers and the media on which the missing White House email might be contained had to remain at the White House and couldn't be transferred to the National Archives as the transition occurred. And so that was a big victory, and we thought, okay, we're going to make some progress, and hopefully the new Obama people will want to settle this matter and will help us figure out what we can find out about those missing White House email. But on the very eve of the transition, the Justice Department filed a motion to dismiss our case, and they had to have done that with full knowledge and consent of the Obama administration, frankly. So it's not really clear what's going to happen here, but there was a court order saying all of this material must stay in place and not go to the archives like it generally would during the course of this litigation. But rather than trying to resolve the litigation, they have tried to say, okay, well, now you should dismiss their Cruz case.
Maybe some sort of a trade-off to let Barack keep his BlackBerry, huh?
I don't know, but again, you know, they've done some really great stuff, and they've said, I want to give them credit for the things they've said. They said they care about ethics. They said they care about transparency. They did all this on the very first day of the new administration. But really, the question with politics, with politicians in general, isn't what you say, it's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So saying all this on the first day is great, but the real question is follow through. We've called on the administration to release not just the records that we've asked for, like these records regarding the missing White House emails, but, for example, the records the Bush administration hasn't wanted to give about the U.S. attorney scandal. And so it's time for the Obama administration to step in, settle lots of litigation, and start handing out and releasing records. The question is, will they do that? And I'm not so sure.
Well, I hope you keep watching and keep giving us the great scoop, because I see a description here in a news article up on your website describing Crew as a liberal-leaning watchdog group, and you might quibble with liberal-leaning, but you are a watchdog, not a lapdog.
That's right.
Thank you, Melanie.
All right. Talk to you next week, Peter.
Melanie Sloan. Visit their website, citizensforethics.org. Coming up next, your phone calls in the Free Speech Zone. Join me. Call me toll-free right now, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Any topic, any viewpoint, from anywhere within the sound of my voice. Give us a call. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor their authentic Chinese dishes and tasty soups like congee and wonton noodle. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale with The Sheila Show, Saturdays 3 to 5 p.m. For the next few weeks, college basketball will be airing during my show, so please, if you tune in and hear basketball, listen in on Sundays from 3 to 5, The Sheila Show, where we talk about everything and help you get through life's toughest challenges with some humor. The Sheila Show, brought to you by Princess Monterey Whale Watching on Old Fisherman's Wharf in Monterey. Remember, if you hear basketball during my show on Saturday, tune in Sundays 3 to 5 for The Sheila Show. See ya.
Go ahead. Take a deep breath. Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system. Your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Good afternoon. This is Mrs. Sunshine with your KRXA 540 traffic and weather report. There's a traffic collision in Monterey, northbound Route 1, just north of State Route 218. And traffic hazard on northbound US 101, just south of Route 85 in Hollister and Gilroy. And in King City, the usual animal running in lanes on Route 18 at Route 14. This time, a calf, a black calf, is running in the lanes.
Hey kids, this is Billy Sunshine with your KRXA weather. It's going to be, it's going to be nice tonight, going down to about 38. Tomorrow, sunshine, and highs in about the 70s. Stick around now for Peter B. Collins, and this is 5:40 a.m., where it's no coincidence we're at the extreme left side of the dial.
Free speech, free speech. Your speech is free right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. My lines are open for you. Tell me what you'd like to talk about. The Obama's openness in government and lobbying rules with some waivers and exceptions. You heard the concerns of Melanie Sloan just a moment ago. John Garamendi talked about the budget mess and also about offshore drilling. Are you ready for oil rigs off the coast of San Francisco or Eureka? I didn't mention Monterey because it's so deep there, like thousands of feet, just a quarter mile offshore, that I don't think it's really feasible to drill for oil in Monterey Canyon, as they call that part of the coast. But others may know better than I. We also talked with writer Luke Bergman about his new book, Getting Ghost, about the drug trade in Detroit. Quite an eye-opener about the human condition in Motown. And Mike Lux was here earlier today sharing his views with me about our concerns about Barack Obama and the way he is so conciliatory to Republicans. And I don't believe they are returning the love. So I hope that this post-partisanship approach will get dialed back, and that'll happen soon. And we also talked about the ravings of Rush Limbaugh with Carl Frisch from Media Matters. So any of those topics available to you, 888-5-PETER-B. The lines are all open right now, so it'll be a short wait on hold if you dial in. We heard that Eric Holder has been approved by the Senate committee, so his confirmation will go to the floor soon. And that's the Attorney General post. I am not really thrilled about Holder. In some respects, it's not the Mark Rich pardon for me. It's that he's been working in the last 6-7 years for Covington and Burling, a fixer law firm in Washington. Clients include ExxonMobil and the Chiquita Banana Company, which is controlled by a right-wing nut from Cincinnati, who I've known since I was a kid or known about, a guy named Carl Lindner. So not the perfect nominee for me, but let's see where Eric Holder goes on torture issues and on returning justice to the operation of the Justice Department. There's also some justice for Lilly Ledbetter. She was a guest on our program last summer. After the Supreme Court ruled against her in her employment discrimination case, she worked for Goodyear Tire and Rubber in the South in a plant in Alabama, and she discovered late in her career that she was repeatedly paid less than males who did the same work. Filed a lawsuit, and Goodyear took it all the way to the Supremes, who took her out on a technicality, saying that her claim had to be filed within 180 days of when she started working for Goodyear. She couldn't possibly have detected the pattern of discrimination in her wages in that initial period of employment. So the court threw out the case, and the Congress has fixed it, a 250 to 177 vote, and the Senate passed the bill 61 to 36. Pardon me. And it basically says that with every paycheck, a new period starts. The clock starts running again. And that certainly helps the case of people like her. Also, I want to thank John in McKinleyville, who resent his email that I accidentally deleted about 10 reasons not to get a dog. He writes, "Dogs are nothing but trouble. If you think they're suitable love objects, you must be desperate for affection." And after the break coming up here, I'll share with you some of the 10 points that he sent me about why dogs are bad. Oh, pardon me, that cold is acting up, and I guess my medications are wearing off. And I don't have any scotch here at the studio. That's an oversight on my part that I'll have to correct. Anyway, I'll spray my throat. You dial the number. We'll take a break and return to the free speech zone. You know my number, 888-573-8372. We respect your free speech rights here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hello, this is Solazar.
Hi, I'm Carolani.
Good Vibration.
Tools for Transformation
is being preempted by sports programming this month.
We'll run encore presentations of some of your favorite shows on the Internet, so tune in. Good Vibration.
Saturdays from 7 to 9 p.m.
on AM 540 KRXA.
Looking for a big city dining experience with local ma and pa prices and service? Look no further than Jim's American Chinese Restaurant at 8069 San Miguel Canyon Road, Prunedale, just behind Burger King. Stephen Lowe, master chef and co-owner of Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, brings to Prunedale his 35 years of experience in cosmopolitan San Francisco. Stephen serves traditional American and Chinese dishes with subtle, delicious French and Italian influences. Jim's has great meals for $10 to $15. For extraordinary food to die for and prices that won't dent your budget, make it a point to visit Jim's American Chinese Restaurant in Prunedale. Jim's is open Monday through Saturday, 11 to 9, and Sundays, noon to 9. At Jim's, you can dine in or take out. And catering is also available. Call 663-4888. That's 663-4888. To make reservations at Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, call 663-4888.
Cornucopia Landscaping in Santa Cruz is a complete design, installation, and maintenance company. Cornucopia Landscaping specializes in water-saving gardens which retain a lush appearance. You can have fruit trees, grapevines, fresh vegetables, and many beautiful ornamental plants while using very little water. In fact, an entire cornucopia landscaping garden sips only as much water in a season as a lawn of equal size gulps down in 1 week. Drip irrigation is the key to a water-saving garden. Are you looking for a beautiful flagstone pathway? Cornucopia Landscaping builds decks, patios, arbors, fences, retaining walls, planter boxes, and many other custom-built wooden structures. Serving Santa Cruz County since 1996. For more information or consultation, call Davis at 831-335-1209. That's 335-1209. That number again is 335-1209.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
The Peter B. Collins Show, now live in Boston on AM 1510. Catch the Jeff Santos Morning Show, New England, every weekday, 6 to 9 a.m. on WWZN. Lines are open for you in the free speech zone right now, 888-5-PETER-B-BOSTON. Give us a call. Love to hear what's on your mind. 888-573-8372. You can always email Peter at peterbcollins.com. And John in McKinleyville up near Eureka resent his email, and I'm glad he did. And John doesn't like dogs. And he learned, as I revealed, that I have a new puppy. And Rocky is sound asleep about 10 feet away from me. He's been nice and quiet today. He was a little overactive on Monday and was barking right in the middle of a couple of critical segments of the show. But he's only 15 weeks old, and I give him a lot of tolerance, I guess. So John is an openly hostile guy about dogs, and he sent me 10 reasons not to get a dog. And in fairness to him, I want to share these with you. And then I want dog lovers and dog haters to call and tell me what you think. Number one, he has 10 reasons not to get a dog, and this is not a David Letterman list, by the way. Number one, dogs are expensive. Americans spend $5 billion annually on pet foods, more than the gross national products of some countries, and more than that on vet bills. Okay. Number two, dogs spread disease, and he lists a bunch of them. Leptospirosis, tuberculosis, histoplasmosis. I've never caught anything from a dog. They do have fleas, and, you know, there's some modern miracles that take care of that. So I've never had any kind of a disease or other condition caused or transmitted to me by a dog. The list goes on. Keeping dogs is socially irresponsible. They consume billions of pounds of food fit for human consumption while a fifth of the world's people are malnourished. I think that's a fair point. You can say the same about humans and about Americans who simply consume too much. And we take more than our fair share of what the planet produces. And that is a fair argument against meat eaters, and I'm still a carnivore. Number four, dogs are aggressive. They bite millions of Americans each year, and most of them are children, it says. What about the postal workers? Young children sustain an estimated 44,000 bites to the face every year, usually from family pets. Dogs kill more people than rattlesnakes, spiders, sharks, rats, alligators, bears, or lions. Okay. Now, I think that's unfair because I believe that pit bulls and some of the other, you know, bigger, more aggressive dogs are responsible for many of those injuries. And Rocky here will never be that dangerous. Dogs are prolific, 15 times more than humans. One bitch could theoretically produce 67,000 offspring in 6 years. Yeah, but they don't, and responsible people spay and neuter their pets. Let's see, dogs are messy. 10 million gallons of urine deposited every day in the U.S. Well, yeah, that's true. I've got the carpets to prove it. Keeping dogs is unnatural. Nature has ordained that carnivores should do their own killing, not have their prey killed for them by primates. Yeah, it's not too persuasive to me. Dogs are noisy. Well, at times. You got to train them. Rocky, you're being really good today. Dogs are destructive. Taxpayers spend $500 million a year to pay for problems caused by dogs. Dog urine can kill trees. Well, proof, please. I'd like to see the data on that. And finally, number 10, dogs are commercially bred like livestock. 90% of dogs in pet stores come from puppy mills. Well, I didn't buy this dog. We adopted it. So, that's the 10 reasons why I shouldn't have a dog. Thank you, John. I'm not persuaded. 888-5-PETER-B, Billy Sunshine is up first. Hey, Billy, how you doing? Billy?
Hello.
Ah, there you are.
Yeah, I got lost.
I want to tell you that I heard your contribution to Hal's morning show today, and I found it a fascinating discussion between Hal and Article Man and you about the prospect of impeaching Jay Bybee from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals here in San Francisco. And I thought it was an interesting discussion, and I came down on the side of Billy and Hal.
And that's actually where I wanted to continue now, although let me say this, you know, it means a lot to Hal when you like his show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I like it when people like my show, too.
Yeah, well, you're the big radio professional, so it counts when you like it, you know. Sure. So, you know, I found that court decision, the Supreme Court decision you were talking about before.
Mm-hmm. The Lilly Ledbetter case?
Yeah. I mean, it's cruel and crazy.
Right.
So it occurs to me that what happened in the Justice Department was immoral and criminal and unconstitutional and everything else you want to name it. You're just not supposed to pack the department that way. You're not supposed to pack the judges that way. And since it was done with such a sort of theological or whatever the basis was, it wasn't based on competence and fairness and any of that. Why shouldn't we be able to claw back all of those appointments? You know, it's an ongoing criminal conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's the fruit of a poison tree, that's exactly what it is. So go ahead.
Well, I think Hal, as a recovering attorney, made the case quite well that this is a high crime. That this is not simply that Jay Bybee disappointed people. Now, Article Man, and for people who are joining this, I'll try to recap so you don't feel completely left out. But Article Man appears to be a lawyer. He's a blogger, and he calls into Hal's show on a regular basis. And he was making the case that, look, Jay Bybee was confirmed by the Senate by a wide margin, including most Democrats, and that is a fair point. But I agree with the fundamental issue here that Jay Bybee was the author and architect of an illegal, unconstitutional, and immoral policy, and that he was rewarded for the tortuous documents and legal theories that he advanced by this lifetime appointment to the Federal Appeals Court here in San Francisco. Not only that, it was a very cunning appointment because Karl Rove, who was in charge of judicial appointments in the Bush White House, was intent on cleansing the Ninth Circuit because there were so many liberals there, and it was a reliable place for cases to get positively appealed or affirmatively changed in a progressive left direction.
Well, it is. And so, California's court, so it should be liberal.
Well, it's a federal court.
Yeah, but it's still the court for this section, you know.
Right.
Area.
Yeah. Okay. But
we're liberals out here.
This was part of a court packing scheme. It was a reward for, as I said, immoral, illegal, unconstitutional legal opinions that were used to support a policy which has now been repudiated. And I don't think it's wrong to at least subject Jay Bybee to the impeachment process. And we need to clarify, when you impeach a judge or a president or a member of Congress or the Senate, it is the equivalent of an indictment. And then a trial proceeds from that impeachment. And Jay Bybee is entitled to defend himself, to call witnesses from Karl Rove to Alberto Gonzalez to victims of torture at Guantanamo, anybody he wants to support his claim that he should not be removed from this lifetime appointment. But he is not above the law, and I don't agree with the caller, Article Man, that this is something that Democrats should just give a pass to.
What about the general concept? Can we go back even as far as, I back to that Supreme Court decision? It is bizarre. And therefore, I suggest to you that those court appointments probably are part of a larger criminal conspiracy. I want to pull it all back. Is it possible?
I don't think you can pull it all back. But my pipe dream, and, talking to Melanie Sloan was a little sobering.
But the Karl Rove thing is obviously the next question. Will that work?
Right. Because Rove's, if Rove testifies and tells the truth, and if Conyers supports that in investigation with other witnesses on the same issues, we blow open the politicization of the Justice Department, the wrongful direction to file phony cases of voter fraud that came from justice to people like David Iglesias and U.S. attorneys in other offices around the country.
Dominoes.
We blow open the Don Siegelman case, which is a wrongful prosecution driven by prosecutors with ties to Karl Rove, very close ties, and includes as a bonus a stolen election that could link us to Mike Connell, the guy who went down in the plane crash in Akron before Christmas.
Wow.
So it doesn't get us to torture, it doesn't get us to eavesdropping, but it does get to some of the core corruption of the Bush era, and for that, I would be greatly satisfied.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you, Billy. Next up, it's David in San Francisco. Thanks for calling the Free Speech Zone.
Yeah, hey, Peter, I was interested in talking about something different, but just as you were talking about with Billy there, one way to track out much of what he was talking about is I personally think that what Bush was up to was killing witnesses. So, in other words, if you go back to BCCI or you go back to Iran-Contra or the falsity of the Iran-Iraq war of 20 years ago or the savings and loans crooks or many of these major, major scandals of 20 going on 25 years ago, you would essentially find that Bush has been essentially killing the witnesses. You know, rounding people up in Iraq and putting them in Guantanamo is just one of the, you go to old Alexander Dumas, 20 years after, a Prisoner of Zenda. I'm trying to think of the other the famous one they made the movie V, Count of Monte Cristo.
Right.
It's all about killing witnesses, getting rid of witnesses.
Now, let me challenge you, David, because I fully support the litany that you just offered of crimes of Bush père et fils, father and son. I don't quite get the killing witnesses part because I don't have quite enough evidence there.
Well, if you just study essentially, say, for example, the Iran-Iraq war, Reagan had been buying weapons at a rapid pace. As soon as he came into office, there was not a weapons program he didn't love. Well, it turned out he was buying utter junk. And it went on for 3 or 4 years, and after a while at the weapons shows, I remember this on NPR, they were talking about one of the weapons shows, and America's reputation for quality weapons had fallen so badly that that the rest of the world was buying other stuff. So they essentially were, they created the Iran-Iraq war as a way of testing U.S. weapons against each other. So in other words, we were giving weapons to Jordan and Syria and Iran and Iraq and Israel and Egypt and everywhere, we're getting the same weapons, but they were getting different training programs. Hmm. And so essentially it was a product test war, and it had nothing to do with obviously there was oil involved and whatnot, but it had a great deal to do with product testing of weapons, and it had very little to do, just like this recent Gaza thing. It was much more a product testing and having a blowout sale so that Bush could do a massive replenishment of Israeli stocks.
Well, David, there's some parts of this I agree with and some I find dubious. First of all, I agree that there have been wars created for inventory clearance at the Pentagon so they could buy new weapons and freshen up their stocks. I also understand that we certainly played both sides of the Iran-Iraq war. As we had the Iran-Contra episode underway, we were resupplying Iran with some parts, and Ali North was at the center of all that. And yes, we did goad the Iraqis, and Rumsfeld made that famous trip to basically say, we're going to complain about your use of chemical weapons and just ignore us. But I don't quite get to the point. You know, we didn't directly sell weapons to Iraq. There was a very interesting episode, and I still, in my archives, have a copy of a cablegram that was sent to Vice President Poppy Bush in 87 or early 88. And he had been charged by Reagan to run this secret support for Iraq against Iran, and Bush authorized the conversion of $3 billion of agricultural credits.
Actually, it was $5 billion, but yeah, you're right.
Well, the memo I have is three, but go ahead.
Yeah, Janet Reno was actually, that happened through the, was it Banco, wasn't Banco Navarro, it was an agricultural bank that was channeled through Miami. And
I think it's BNL, the Bank Nacional Lavoro of Italy.
Right, right. And mm-hmm. Was she the state attorney general she was a U.S. district attorney for Miami at the
uh-huh.
time, and she didn't, this was easily traced through that bank straight out to, was it Iraq? And it was supposed to be blamed on buying that long gun, but it was actually just a layers and layers of scandal. And
okay, but David, my time is tight here.
Oh, sure.
Can you establish though that U.S. weapons were sold to Iraq in that time frame of 86 to 88? Because I've never seen any documentation of that.
Well, I remember when the war came out, there was a brand new paper. It was called War News. I could even find you a copy of it. And there was a letter Richard Nixon wrote to Ceausescu thanking him Nixon, Mitchell, and Agnew were invested in Ceausescu supplying
That's Romania, by the way. Go ahead.
Yeah, that Ceausescu would supply material to Saddam Hussein, and they were able to blame it on the communists, even though it was truly Richard Nixon, John Mitchell, and Spiro Agnew who were the financial backers.
Mm-hmm.
So it was this ugly, and this was a letter, and then the very end of the letter, it's
send me that info if you have it, or copies of it. I'd like to refresh my memory. But you know, the outlines of what you're saying I agree with. Some of the details I can't quite confirm from my own recollection. So I gotta run, but I thank you for the call, David.
Have a good week.
Always good to talk to you. We'll take a break and return for more of your phone calls in the Free Speech Zone. You know the number, 888-5 Peter B.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Good afternoon. This is your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. I'm Mrs. Sunshine. Traffic's looking pretty good out there. We just have a couple of accidents to report. There's a traffic accident on northbound Route 1, just north of Route 218 in Monterey County. And just in Santa Cruz area, a traffic collision on Eureka Canyon Road at Grizzly Flat Road. Otherwise, it's all clear.
Hey, kids, this is your old radio pal, Billy Sunshine, with your weather. It's going to be a little cold tonight, down to about 38. But tomorrow, sunshine, 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 with a warming trend, so it'll be in the low 70s for the next few days. And now, stick around for Peter B. Collins on 540 AM, where it's no coincidence. We're at the extreme left side of the dial.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie. I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave. A shrinking glacier. I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Finally, a new talk show on KRXA that we can all use. Sundays 11 to 12, listen to Fix It Up, an hour-long call-in talk show with contractor Bruce Pippin and electrician Marie. With years of experience and lots of humor, they'll answer all your questions, from how to fix your leaky faucet to finding the right contractor. You'll find simple, easy solutions to all kinds of things that can break down in your home. Fix It Up with Bruce and Marie, Sundays 11 to 12. Email in your questions or call in, only on AM 540 KRXA. Fix It Up.
Hi, this is Hal, and you're listening to KRXA 540. Just wanted to let you know about some of our recent schedule changes. First of all, we are playing basketball from Cal State Monterey Bay and Cal Berkeley this year. So if your favorite program is interrupted, we apologize, but you can catch all of our talk shows in full on the internet at their regularly scheduled times at KRXA540.com. In addition, we are now playing Ed Schultz live from 10 to noon. We play the first hour of Ed 8 to 9 p.m., and we play the entire Tom Hartman show 9 to midnight, Monday through Friday, with the exception of Thursday, when we start Tom Hartman's show at 11 in the evening and run it through 2 in the morning. Thank you so much for listening to KRXA 540. And on the internet at KRXA540.com.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, 7 minutes in front of the hour. Wherever you are, whether you listen live or late at night, on the weekend, podcasts, on-demand files, I'm really pleased you found the show. Now, go ahead and tell everybody you know, because we would like to expand our reach and our impact to keep the show going. So do everything you can, and let me know your progress. Email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. Here's Chris in Salinas. Thanks for calling, Chris. I've been getting your emails. Appreciate them.
Hey, thanks for everything you do. It's a breath of fresh air every day.
Well, good. First,
I wanted to say that I just got my shipment from the Organic Wine Company, my little three-bottle set with free shipping.
So all right, good.
I heard it on your show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that support. I really appreciate it.
I want to just say that I kind of agree with that article, man, on that judge, as far as all the information really was available, and then they confirmed him.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to argue that point, as much as I want to see the guy gone.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what makes more sense is that if we go after Antonio Scalia for not recusing himself when the Sierra Club was suing, I guess, him or the administration for that energy task force releasing
right.
the information.
And he went duck hunting with Cheney.
Right, yeah. 3 weeks or right prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
And
they only talked about buckshot and double-barreled shotguns.
So I just think that, you know, that would be another judge that should be impeached.
Well, and that'd be a much more valuable removal if we could achieve that. Well, I see you're kind of on both sides there, because you're saying you agree with Article Man that Bybee was confirmed, but you know he refused to discuss those issues about the torture memos at the time of his confirmation. Now, the fact that Democrats accepted that, you know, is a point in his favor. But still, my argument, Chris, is that there is nothing wrong with bringing an impeachment process. It's up to him to survive that. And because of the various issues here, that yes, there was a high crime that was generated through the collusion between Bybee and you and David Addington over at the White House, I would like to see all of them exposed for what they did and let the process run its course. I you know, ultimately don't think it will happen, and I think that Obama has an allergy to this kind of what he would consider a backward-looking investigation. But the Democrats are contradicting themselves, and Pelosi is first and foremost with it, where, you know, she blocked impeachment for years and now says, well, yeah, you know, I think we should follow up at the Justice Department. Those inconsistencies aren't lost on me.
Hey, one thing I wanted to also try to bring up as far as the stimulus package.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really disappointed in Obama and all that. I sent you an email. I don't know if you got it or not.
But, I did, yeah.
You know, when the Minnesota Bridge fell down, the civil engineers, and I can't remember, Society of Civil Engineers or American Civil Engineers, came out with a cost to repair our infrastructure was $1.6 trillion at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's $2.2 trillion.
Right.
His stimulus package is only $850 billion, only, I say. But you
and,
know,
it's 40% meaningless tax cuts.
And also, there's only, from what my understanding, there's only $30 billion towards roads and bridges. And then the rest of the so-called job creation is going to go to private contractors. They're not going to be public jobs programs mm-hmm. where it's run by the state or the city or the federal government. It's going to be run by private contractors. So there goes 30% right off the top for profits, and then who knows, low-paying, non-union, no-benefit jobs.
Yeah.
So. You know, it's difficult. You know,
yeah, it really is. And, you know, a lot of this, I have to confess, I feel is just for show. This is an attempt to do things in Washington to show that they care, to show they know there's a crisis. But I don't believe, just like you are saying, that this will directly impact in the way that we are led to believe. And so, yeah, it's a real mixed bag. There is some good stuff from a progressive point of view in the package. Mike Lux was detailing some of the environmental projects. But on balance, I'm not excited about this, and I don't have confidence that it will calm the markets and really help get us back on track. It's not addressing the mortgage virus that still remains virulent in our economic system, and it doesn't help us reach bottom, either in terms of the collapse of our economy or the incredible drop in home price values. And until we really find the bottom in both of those areas, we're really just throwing good money after bad.
Well, if he doesn't get it right the first time, it's going to be a disaster for him, and for the Democratic Party.
Well, I'll wait and see on that, but I can't contradict what you're saying.
It
certainly is the pattern that is presenting itself. Thank you, Chris.
Happy trails to you.
We'll be back at you tomorrow, same time, same bat channel. Join me then.
Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then.
Has your computer been slowing down? Are you having problems with your email? Or when you go to the internet, is your browser taking so long to load that it seems like the worldwide wait? I'm Luke Ford, CEO of My Computer Works. We help people just like you with computer problems you can't fix. With one easy call, we can help you get your computer working the way you want it, speeding it back up, making sure you can send and receive emails, and making the internet fun again. You'll speak to a U.S.-based technician who knows what they're doing, who can usually fix your computer on the very first call. If your computer's been slowing down, you can't get your email to work, your internet's taking forever, or if you're not sure what's wrong, but your computer's just not working the way you want it, call My Computer Works, and we'll help you fast.
Call My Computer Works right now, toll-free, 888-629-9618. Tell them Peter B. sent you, 888-629-9618. One more time, 888-629-9618.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. It's a partial victory for President Obama. The House late today approved an $819 billion economic stimulus plan, but without any Republican support. Mr. Obama's been trying hard to win over at least some GOP votes. Republicans say the Democratic package puts too much emphasis on spending, not enough on tax cuts. Martin Regalia is chief economist for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
It will improve the economy. It is a step in the right direction. It will not improve the economy as quick as we were hoping that it would.
But Dick Thompson, an advisor to Washington State Governor Christine Gregoire, defends the spending.
The funds for infrastructure and even some of the funds for things like Pell Grants and for training are all job-related. They will all produce jobs.
The Senate takes up its own stimulus proposal next week. The Postal Service is losing billions, and it wants Congress to lift the requirement for mail delivery 6 days a week.
We're not asking for a bailout. This is not a bailout. We are looking for changes in the law that would enable us to address the current financial crisis in the United States.
Spokesman Greg Rick Fry says deliveries would stop on the day of the week with the lowest volume of mail. Roger Mahoney, the Roman Catholic Cardinal in Los Angeles, is the subject of a federal criminal probe, according to the L.A. Times. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman reports.
According to the report, the U.S. Attorney's Office here in Los Angeles has begun a grand jury investigation. One of the potential targets, Cardinal Roger Mahoney. The newspaper says the probe is designed to determine whether Mahoney and other church leaders committed fraud by failing to protect children from pedophile priests. An attorney for Cardinal Mahoney says he is aware of the probe, but has been told Mahoney is not a target. 2 years ago, the L.A. Archdiocese paid out $660 million to victims of church abuse. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
CBS News correspondent Cameo McCormick was in Springfield, Illinois this afternoon when there was a dramatic development at the Rob Blagojevich impeachment trial.
The president of the Illinois Senate just interrupted the proceedings here to announce that Governor Blagojevich wants to make an appearance here after all, not to testify or answer questions, but to act as his own attorney and make a closing statement. The rules would allow the governor an hour and a half. Blagojevich has so far refused to take part in this trial, calling it unfair. Instead, he's been making his case on news and talk shows.